Thank you. At this time, Madam Clerk, we'll read the changes to our agenda, please.
You have several changes to today's agenda. Item B2, letter transmitting plans and specification clerk's file for this project to install energy-saving lamps and ballast to existing fixtures at the county jail and ancillary areas of the county jail located at the County Operations Center Hall District. Recommendations for approval and instruct clerk to give notice of bid opening set for October 23, 2006 at 3 p.m. Staff is requesting that the bid opening date be changed to October 26, 2006. Attached for your review is the amended staff report. Under amended hearing items, item C5 is misnumbered on the cover sheet. Staff is requesting that the cover sheet be amended to read C5, not C6. Staff is requesting that the following language be added to the title on the cover sheet for item C5. C5D, Donald and Barbara Hoffer, to alter boundaries of an agricultural preserve and contract by adding approximately 30 acres, and the project is located at 1535 Kyler Canyon Road, approximately 3/4 of a mile southeast of Paso Robles in the 1st District. And one additional item that staff is also going to talk to you about on during the consent agenda, but item B15A, staff is requesting that you withdraw this item and continue it to next week due to some technical corrections that they weren't able to complete this morning. That's your changes for today.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Moving along, presentations to entertain a motion at this time.
So moved.
And before I call for approval, these presentations will include A1 and A2, and we're going to combine them. With that, a roll call, please.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. Would Mr. Linthal do the honors of reading the first presentation, please?
Thank you, Chairman Sajjan. Probably one of the best parts of my job is when you get to recognize people that you not only admire, but you've known basically all your adult life. It is a real pleasure for me to read this resolution dedicating State Highway 101 from San Luis Obispo to southern Atascadero city limits, the Alex Madonna Memorial Highway. Phyllis, would you please stand and step over here to the podium while I read this? And if you want to have family members stand with you, that's fine, too. I see other people out there. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas Alex Madonna was born in 1918 in a house that was on property that is now part of Camp San Luis Obispo, and by the age of 5, after losing his father and brother, lived with his mother and older sister near Mission San Luis Obispo. Whereas Alex Madonna started a construction company with a Model T Ford truck and a pickup shovel before he graduated from San Luis Obispo High School in 1937. Whereas Alex Madonna opened the world-famous Madonna Inn in San Luis Obispo in 1958. Whereas Alex Madonna built the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport and completed work on many projects involving the construction of State Highway Route 101 within the county of San Luis Obispo. And whereas Alex Madonna was very generous to people in need while also supporting and contributing to many local charities. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo, State of California, does hereby dedicate a portion of the State Highway 101 in San Luis Obispo, the Alex Madonna Memorial Highway. If you would like to say a word, you're welcome to do so, including family members, if you care to.
As you were reciting all of the different events and things in Mr. Madonna's life, it reminded me of when we were first married. He would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning every single day, and that was when he was doing a lot of work on Highway 101. And I was thinking, my goodness, he would have never, ever known that this would be possible. And I really and truly thank each and every one of you from the bottom of my heart. I think that Alex would be extremely humbled by this. And he felt like this was his town Only his. Not the rest of you. But he loved San Luis Obispo. He was born and raised here. And the fact that you have that sign up there in front of the inn and on his so-called road, he paved all this years and years ago. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
We thank you, and we know that you had a lot to do with his life and success. Just looking at your children,
oh, you're very
kind. We're all proud of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, Ms. Bianchi will do the honors of reading the second resolution, please.
Would Toby Charles please step to the microphone? This is a resolution declaring October 15th through 21st, 2006, as Character Counts Week in San Luis Obispo County. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas young people will be the stewards of our communities, nation, and world in critical times, and the present and future well-being of our society requires an involved, caring citizenry with good character. And whereas the Aspen Declaration states that effective character education is based on core ethical values, which form the foundation of democratic society. And those are trustworthiness, respect, responsibility, fairness, caring, and citizenship. Okay. And these six pillars of character transcend cultural, religious, and socioeconomic difficulties. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby declare the week commencing Sunday, October 15th, as San Luis Obispo County Character Counts Week in perpetuity, and endorses the six pillars of character and urges all citizens to seek out opportunities to incorporate these core ethical values into their work with young people, and encourages all citizens, corporate and individual, to model these traits of good character in an ongoing commitment to promote character development and ethical behavior in the youth of our community. So if you'd like to step forward.
Appreciate the county for doing this. Theodore Roosevelt once said, "Character, in the long run, is the decisive factor in the life of an individual and of nations alike." Looking at the lack of ethics in politics and corporations today, we all need to realize character truly matters. Our children are on their way to becoming worthwhile citizens and the leaders of tomorrow. If we want them to possess the traits of character we most admire, we need to teach them today what those traits are. Please listen carefully to the following six pillars of character. Trustworthiness. A person of character is trustworthy, lives with integrity, is honest, reliable, and loyal. Respect. A person of character values all persons, lives by the golden rule, respects the dignity, privacy, and freedom of others, is courteous and polite to all, and is tolerant and accepting of differences. Responsibility. A person of character meets the demands of duty, is accountable, pursues excellence, and exercises self-control. Fairness. A person of character is fair and just, is impartial, listens, and is open to differing viewpoints. Caring. A person of character is caring, compassionate, kind, loving, considerate, and charitable. Citizenship. A person of character is a good citizen, does his or her share, helps the community, plays by the rules, and respects authority and law. By establishing a time to highlight character education efforts in the county, and to draw attention to the importance of modeling good character, the County Board of Supervisors is sending a message that character does count, and I thank you for doing so.
Thank you.
If Mr. Overy will do the honors of reading the church resolution, we have with us Mr. Zilke, Ms. Bellman, and I believe we have guests from Sacramento, Mr. Green and Jenkins. Have they arrived? Okay.
I'm just waiting for him to let me do this.
Please, Mr. Ovid, you may go forward.
There we go. It gives me great pleasure to actually begin the celebration of 100 years. Although the dunes have been there much longer, the utilization of that, I think, is what we're celebrating. And the resolution reads as follows: whereas the Oceano Dunes State Vehicle Recreational Area, located near Pismo Beach, California, is a 4,900-acre state park, and is a unique location where affordable beach camping, off-highway vehicle recreation, and environmental protections coexist, and where Oceano Dunes State Vehicle Recreational Area is a unique 100-year-old phenomenon in I'll get it right. You think you have trouble with the English language.
Thank you for making me look good.
In California, and is a significant part of the state's history and culture, and whereas in the early 1900s, as automobile became popular, large automobile meets were organized, which drew thousands of people to watch races along the flat coastal speedway running from the city of Pismo Beach to Muscle Rock, or Devil's Slide in the local parlance. And whereas Oceano State Vehicle Recreational Area receives more than 2.1 million annual visitors throughout the state, and over 50% from Central Valley, and has a higher annual visitation per acre than any other state park in the state. And whereas the year 2006 marks the 100th anniversary of recreational motor vehicle use in Oceano Dunes, which will be celebrated from October 20th to October 22nd at the Dunes State Vehicle Recreational Area. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize Oceano Dunes State Vehicular Recreational Area on their 100th anniversary. And that is a mouthful to say those things. Andy.
Thank you very much for this resolution and your continued support for Oceano Dunes State Vehicular Recreation Area. 100 years of motorized recreation in the dunes, formerly Pismo Dunes State Vehicular Recreation Area. For decades, the park and their visitors have contributed to the local economy through sustainable recreation in the dunes and protection of our resources. We're very happy and pleased that the board has taken this action. And we invite you to the celebration this weekend, starting with the dinner in the evening on Friday, and activities throughout the weekend, from national, international motorcycle and ATV racing, jet ski exhibitions, and children safety and orientation for ATV riders, and other activities. So please come out and play. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, now we get into the international languages and presentations. I would like to challenge myself and invite them by their names, our guests. But before I go to them, with us, Ms. Trudy Jarrett, representing League of Women Voters, and she's the chairperson. If you'll come, we have Ms. Lois Hughes, better known as the chauffeur of the visitors. With us also, Irina Primakova, who's going to do the translation. And our guests from Ukraine are Tatiana Himchenko, Yulia Yezmukhanova, also Tatiana Pichonchik, and Oksana Letkova. And before I ask Supervisor Patterson to read the resolution, I'm going to challenge and welcome our guests in their own language. Дорогі українські друзі, ласкаво просимо до Каліфорнії, нехай вам буде тепло на нашій землі. How was that?
You have it spelled out phonetically.
And for my American friends, I just told them, dear Ukrainian friends, welcome to California, and I hope you'll enjoy your visit. Now, Mr. Patterson, see if you can top that up.
I'll do my best. This is in English. Supervisor Asajjan took the challenging part. We are honored here, obviously, to have these distinguished guests among us. It gives me great pleasure to read this resolution that proclaims October 15th through the 21st, 2006, as Ukrainian Open World Democracy Leadership Week in San Luis Obispo County. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas the Congress of the United States, through the Open World Leadership Center, has established a nonpartisan program to bring delegations of emerging world leaders from Ukraine to the United States. And whereas the selection of the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County from among leagues across the nation to host a Ukrainian delegation for the first and only exchange program in the U.S. legislative branch has brought the delegation to San Luis Obispo County. And whereas the government of the County of San Luis Obispo is a participant in the sharing of information with the Ukrainian delegation on how a democratic government is run, now therefore be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim October 15th through the 21st, 2006, as Ukrainian Open World Democracy Leadership Week in San Luis Obispo County.
Bring all of you here, and we'll have and we'll have one of your ladies on each side. And
we have to squish.
Yeah. Okay. Want to get closer? Give it a second. Anybody else with a camera?
Okay.
Okay. If it doesn't work, we're here.
We can fly to the Ukraine.
Please, if you would like to address the supervisors.
Yes, I certainly would. Good morning, Chairman Asajjan and supervisors. My name is Trudy Jarrett, and I'm president of the League of Women Voters, San Luis Obispo County. On behalf of the Open World Program, the League of Women Voters of the United States, and the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County, I want to sincerely thank the county for participating in this program. When the League first decided to submit a proposal to Washington, D.C., we reached out to county government. We talked to Chairman Asajjan, and he expressed immediately the support of this county government to participate in this program so we can share our form of government with these extraordinary professionals from the Ukraine. These individuals are the future of Ukraine, and we are so pleased to have them here today. So I want to thank you sincerely for allowing county government to participate in this very worthwhile program. I'm going to ask each of them to just say a few words, but first, thanks to the generosity of Cynthia and Don Hughes of Pismo Beach, they have provided the League with a series of flags, and I'm going to present to each of the supervisors a Ukrainian flag so you can remember the Ukrainians for a long time after their visit is completed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
Maybe we should have them autograph it in case they become president of Ukraine.
There is no doubt that we will hear at least one of these names in the near future, and I suspect all of their names. Remarkable individuals. Now, unfortunately, I do not have Cacho's skills with language, but so I'm going to attempt simply the first names and ask the individuals to step forth and just say a few words. And I would like to start with the Open World Program facilitator, and she is Yulia.
Hello, my name is Yulia Yasovalova. I'm facilitator of the group, and I thank you very much for a warm welcome in here, and I hope we learn a lot. We already learned, and I think this would be a great program.
Thank you, and welcome.
Titania.
My name is Tatiana Himchenko. Thank you very much, World, the Open World Program. We are here, and the TULIK, which organized this all, the very interesting, useful program for us. I'm working for NGO Every Child. We are improving children's rights in Ukraine, set up social services in Ukraine. So what we are doing, we're doing our best. And I think I will learn here in the United States to improve my work in and do it more best. Thank you very much.
And now, Oksana.
Thank you for inviting us. I'm a journalist, and I'd like to get as much information as possible about democracy in America. Thank you.
Welcome.
And last but certainly not least, Titania, another journalist, by the way.
Good morning for everybody. I'm Tatiana Pechonchik. I'm from Kiev. I'm studying at Taras Shevchenko Kiev National University at PhD studies, and also I work in Ukrainian independent news agency UNIAN, and I'm very glad to be here among these outstanding people. Thank you very much for coming, for inviting us. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I think they also have a little something for you.
Thank you.
Yes, they're being presented with photographs of Ukraine. It's a beautiful, beautiful country. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Welcome, and we're very honored and proud to have you here with us. But before you leave, some supervisors might want to make a comment or two. We'll start with Ms. Bianchi.
Yes, it gives me extraordinarily great pleasure to welcome young women. Some of us who are getting ready to retire really do appreciate young people coming along behind us, particularly young women. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
What I'm going to try and do now is we have a pin that's got the county logo on it, and I'm trying to get some brought down for you all.
Before you leave, we'll have those arranged to.
I get somebody to answer the phone.
And we're also going over to Julie Rodewald's office, County Clerk Recorder, so we'll be here for a while this morning.
Okay, and if we don't have it today, I'll bring it with me next time I'm meeting you all at the location.
Okay, bye.
Thank you. Well, with that positive note, we'll continue our agenda. Next on our calendar is public comment period, and first request to speak is Mr. Greening, followed by Richard Sadowski.
I'm Eric Greening. Good morning. I'm delighted to see our friends from Ukraine here and glad they are observing democracy, and you will be, of course, observing democracy sometimes at its rough edges, because this is where people come and bring problems and concerns to try to make our democracy even stronger. And so that is the process. And what I'm going to be addressing today is local advisory committees, which is a wonderful system you should have in Ukraine. You have the benefit of advice from a variety of local advisory committees scattered around the county. Their purpose is to stay in close touch with and serve as a voice for the communities they represent. The usefulness and credibility of this service, of their service to you, depends on the care they take to ensure that the communities they represent are fully aware in advance of the proposals and issues on which they are to take action in any given meeting, so that all community members who care about these issues know to show up and take advantage of the opportunity to be heard. At their September meeting, one of your community advisory committees, on a 2/3 vote, added an action item to its agenda that had not been noticed to the community, and they took an action. When at their October meeting, one of their members made them aware that in so doing they had violated their own bylaws, their response was not to retract the previous action, but to direct that a bylaws revision be brought to them that would make such surprise actions legitimate. In my opinion, making such actions legitimate by their bylaws does not make them legitimate as community advice. Any community advisory committee that arrogates to itself the power to act behind its community's back is ceasing to serve, accurately reflect, and faithfully transmit that community's wishes. It is true that emergencies sometimes occur, but community advisory committees don't have the responsibility of organizing emergency response. Their responsibility is to inform you of community sentiment. The last thing you need is to have your hearings filled with aggrieved community members claiming that their advisories pulled a fast one and don't speak for them. It is time for you to agendize an action item to certify basic standards for the performance of community advisory committees, and one of the topics you should consider is access by their communities to accurate information about what they will consider at any given meeting so that all voices on an issue can be heard and passed on to you. You are only well served by advisories when you know you can trust their process. And I do hope that our friends from Ukraine are hearing about the Ralph M. Brown Act. It is precious. It's something that empowers
Thank you, Mr. Green.
Citizens. Thank you.
Mr. Sadowski, followed by Mark Phillips.
Good morning, Honorable Board. Richard Sadowski, former employee at the Cayuga Sanitary District and Grade 4 wastewater collections operator. There is a systemic problem within the county of San Luis Obispo, and in my opinion, it has one common denominator. Be it eminent domain issues in Atascadero, countywide flood control problems, cease and desist orders for Los Osos, or the dumping of raw sewage in Morro Bay and Cayucas. These issues are brought before the local and county boards by its concerned citizens and have a common thread, and that is the conflicts of interest by its appointed and elected officials and the selective enforcement of existing laws by the Slo County DA, in particular, Gerald T. Shea. The conflicts of interest can be found in every facet of local government in this county. However, the lack of enforcement of criminal activity within our building, planning, and special districts in this county is the sole responsibility of the district attorney, Gerald T. Shea. The concerned citizens whose properties and life savings are being threatened by this element deserve an opportunity to hear why Gerald T. Shea is willing to turn a blind eye to permit facilitators like Jeff Edwards, who continues with criminal activity, yet he is willing to pursue cases of false assumptions of unlawfulness. I am once again respectfully requesting that this board agendize a public meeting with the presence of Gerald T. Shea, district attorney, to discuss the conflicts of interest and the selective enforcement, preferably before the election. Thank you for this opportunity to address the board.
Thank you, Mr. Sadowski, but it wouldn't be fair to allow this to go forward because, first of all, you want to hear this before election. Mr. Shea already been elected to the office for his term without opposition. And that Mr. Shea is a very honorable person in my personal view. And maybe you are
you're incorrect, because there is another Gerald T. Shea that is not the same as our district attorney, who is in the development, who has probably investments. It's not for me to say if it's to your liking or not, but I would appreciate if you look into that and correct yourself and offer an apology to our district attorney. Sir, I'm going to stop it at this time. If you care to... No, sir. This is just a direction for you. Mr. Phillips?
I have evidence that's not the same as...
Mr. Phillips, followed by Mitchell Lacher. I hope I say that correctly.
Hi, my name is Mark Phillips. I'm from Atascadero. Thank you for the opportunity to address this board. I'm talking, as usual, on GE Food and Crops. In light of the long grain rice contamination event that occurred in Arkansas, as I'm sure you know because I've told you, that contamination spread across several states in the United States. They don't know how it occurred. Clearly, it was not a pollen drift issue. It's ended up in grocery stores in Europe, et cetera, et cetera. There's been lawsuits. And so on the local level, we found out through a tip that Cal Poly is growing genetically engineered corn on their campus. I believe it's the Roundup Ready variety. So I contacted Jeffrey Wong, Dr. Jeffrey Wong of Cal Poly, to ask him a couple questions about what they're doing to prevent the possibility of contamination with the CSA, the Community Supported Agricultural Farm, the organic farm that's also on Cal Poly campus. When I asked him, I said, well, what are you guys doing about the contamination issue, and are you doing any testing? He didn't get back to me for a while. It was kind of tough getting an answer out of him. And finally, he wrote back and said that he didn't know very much about what was going on at Cal Poly, but he didn't really think that contamination was going to be an issue because he thought that the planting dates were different and such. And there was something about prevailing winds. And, of course, they call it prevailing winds because they don't always blow in the same direction. So I got back to him and I said, well, on the one hand, you say you don't know much about what's going on. On the other hand, you say there's not much chance of contamination. And that's when he kind of went silent for a while until I contacted, copied Mr. Patterson's office on an email. And he finally got back to me and said, well, we have discussed the possibility of doing some testing on the sweet corn, and that they hope to get together with John Phillips, the department head of HCS, and they're going to implement an improved system of communication between all members of the Cal Poly farming operation. Well, that's great, and I hope all that happens. But that's the kind of thing that should have happened before the genetically engineered corn was planted. You can't go back and correct things once you've done them wrong. This is how contamination happens. When all the regulations that are in place are so weak that you don't have to do anything. You don't have to notify anybody. You don't have to have any buffer zones. None of the liability issues have been cleared up. People just don't get the motivation to do this right, to do this properly. Contamination is inevitable. This coexistence models are not proven to work, and I don't believe they will. So I'm bringing this up again. We had asked, the board had asked Bob Lilly to look into the issue of notification. I'd like to know how that's going. I'd also like to know how the Freedom of Information request has gone in terms of finding out what test crops have been planted here, because right now we don't know. I hope this issue doesn't fall from your awareness. It's vitally important. Once contamination occurs, you can't undo it, and we'll all lose the choice of eating non-GE food. Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Mitchell Lacher, followed by Adam Hill. Good morning.
Advisors, I have a letter here that I'd like to disseminate to the supervisors.
Please bring them forward. Right. And Mary, as you speak, want to give us your name for the record, please.
Okay, my name is Mary Mitchell Lacher, and I reside in Rolling Hills, and I've resided there since 1989. A close family member has a sensitive government position, so I prefer not to give out my address if that's okay.
We always ask the name for the record. You don't have to give us the rest of it.
All righty. And I titled this October 3rd letter, which I've just disseminated to the supervisors, my Sleepless in Rolling Hills letter. I've lived there for some time. I represent myself here today and myself only. As the airport expansion has been underway, I've been delighted in how the construction company has handled their construction. Their nighttime operations go all through the whole night, and the company has been very conscientious for keeping their noise level down, and I haven't been disturbed in the least. Unfortunately, I can't say the same for the airport, which has upped its maintenance noise to considerably more than I've heard in past years. And that's why I'm here today and why I wrote the letter to the administration of the airport, was because there seems to be an incredible increase in nighttime maintenance activities that have caused me and other neighbors that I've spoken to not be able to sleep throughout the nights anymore. So after I wrote this letter and hand-delivered it to the airport administration office, I noticed there was a dramatic decrease in the amount of nighttime airport activity that was maintenance-related. But I'm still here today because I have not received a copy of the airport agreement that I've heard about so often through the years. The airport agreement that is between the surrounding communities, such as Rolling Hills and Country Club, and the airport. And when I first came to Rolling Hills, the old-timers told me that the agreement specified there would be no jet traffic. That the airport agreement has evolved through the years, and now we have jets. But I think it's important that we have open communication between the surrounding communities and the airport, and that's why I'm here today. I'd like to facilitate that if possible. And I have the ability to organize the Rolling Hills neighborhood, if not the Rolling Hills and Country Club neighborhood, so as we can open up those lines of communication. So I'd like to request that airport agreement be provided to me, because it has not been provided yet.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hill, followed by Michael Kovacs.
Thank you. Adam Hill, Grover Beach. I'm here today to make a statement about the public relations campaign conducted on behalf of Measure J. What the proponents of Measure J tell us is that Ernie DeLidio has been treated unfairly and that Measure J is the fair solution. I do not know if Mr. DeLidio has or has not been treated unfairly, but I do know that if Measure J passes, I and my wife and tens of thousands of other taxpayers in this county will be treated unfairly. We will be treated unfairly because we, the taxpayers, will have to subsidize the enormous impacts caused by Mr. DeLidio's project. Furthermore, funds that are needed for a number of other critical projects throughout the county will be diverted in order to pay for this one. How do I know this? Because I've taken the time to read the impartial reports issued by Caltrans, SLOCOG, the City of SLO, the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and the Air Pollution Control District. And I've also taken time to read Measure J. When one reads it, especially in the light of these other reports, it's quite clear that the whole point of this initiative is to bypass local and state controls and to do so in such a way that the developer will have to pay very little for the very large consequences this project will cause. Furthermore, the impartial analysis by the county's council suggests this initiative may in fact be illegal. It saddens me that this has become such a contentious issue and that so much money has been spent and so much attention has been given in a manner that divides our community and erodes civic spirit and common purpose. But what is still most disappointing is the lack of informed leadership shown by public officials who either openly support Measure J or tacitly support it with their calculated silence. As I've said before to this board, the public expects and deserves fact-based decision-making from its officials, and that means examining the objective data and avoiding the distortion by private agendas. This should not be a partisan issue. This should not be a wedge between good people. Regardless of how one feels about the organized opposition to Mr. DeLidio's project, reason and foresight should prevail over emotion and expediency. There is still time for all public officials in this county to make themselves heard and to do so in a way that truly serves the greater good. And that means every public official should urge no on Jay and let Mr. DeLidio and his financial backers return to the city so that a truly fair solution, one that does not exploit the taxpayers and bypass local requirements, can be worked out. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Kovacs, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Yes, good morning. I am Michael Kovacs, a citizen activist in San Luis Obispo County for about 18 years. And a U.S. American citizen this year for 50 years, 50 years. I'm a proud and honored U.S. citizen by choice, like Chairman Cocho rather than the rest of you who are citizens by accident.
You know, sir, I would take offense to that.
Well, watch your language, please, Harry. No, say what...
I do not consider my birth an accident, sir.
What do you mean? Well, all right. Don't pick on my word. I was just trying to be funny for a change. Yes, I have been a citizen, like I said, for 50 years. And 18 years ago, I read an article in the Los Angeles Times and also in the Orange County Register on the same day about San Luis Obispo leads the state. The report ranks the state's 58 counties based on percentage of increases in population, increase in jobs, increase in personal income, and increase in retail sales over the previous 5 years. This is the way I heard about San Luis Obispo County. The top 10 counties were, at that time, San Luis Obispo County, number one, Lake County, Placer, Santa Clara, Sonoma County, Riverside, Santa Cruz, Ventura, San Diego, and Solano counties. Of course, we came up here, looked around, and I decided to come up to retire here whenever I am eligible to retire. So I purchased properties, and then I have been happy about it ever since. However, our county is no longer ranking number one. The near $400 million budget paid borne by less than a quarter of a million population in this county, 250 or 260,000 of us. So in addition to this county government, of course, there are seven more city governments that we have to pay for. And I have been here at this table many, many times urging the supervisors in general.
Mr. Kovac, I'll give you a couple more seconds since we interrupted your speech.
Is it over?
Yeah, I'll give you another three, 4 seconds.
All right.
You had
my fifth district supervisor in particular to do everything to resume our rank number one.
Thank you, and I do agree with Mr. Ovid that his citizenship was a pleasurable moment for his parents. With that, Ms. Taylor, followed by Mickey Sheehan.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident and taxpayer of Los Osos. The county is preparing to assume the responsibility of the construction of the sewer project in Los Osos. The actions of this board and those assigned to the project by the board will be in a fishbowl at all times. They will be scrutinized for all of their actions. The electronic communications today allows not only the county, but the state and beyond to review how this board proceeds. Is the board appointing a sanitary engineer, an engineer with experience, one with hands-on experience, not out-of-the-book engineer, that is not wed to an antiquated gravity collection system, notorious for creating more environmental problems than the perceived problems the sewer is supposed to address? This project must address and include the needs of the recharge of the water basin. A fast-tracked sewer system is not the answer. There are trusted alternative sewer systems to the dinosaur gravity collection system. Systems approved and used in this jurisdiction of the Regional Water Quality Control Board. This board, as much as it may trouble you, must remember Los Osos is a part of this county and will be paying for this project. The Los Osos taxpayers have every right to expect, if not demand, the best holistic approach to the project available. Thank you.
Thank you. Nikki Sheehan, followed by George Taylor.
I have a bumper sticker, and what it says is...
Your name for the record, please.
Oh, my name is Mickey Sheehan. I'm a resident of San Luis Obispo. What this bumper sticker says is the problems we face today will not be solved by the minds that created them. One more time. The problems we face today will not be solved by the minds that created them. That's not a quote from Angela Davis or Huey P. Newton or Karl Marx. It's a quote from Albert Einstein, a rather apolitical fellow. There's a clear and present danger, it seems to me, in this county. Back east, we have ombudsmen who look at oversight, who act as watchdogs when there are complaints filed, especially against agencies such as planning commissions, building commissions, any kind of commission. Ombudsman. You don't seem to have one here in this county. Why is that? Why is there no oversight? For more than a year, I videotaped every single board meeting of the Cayucas Sanitation District. I would like to set up a forum. You could perhaps agendize it. I would like to make it public, and I would especially like in attendance the district attorney of this county, Gerald T. Shea, and especially the grand jury of this county to watch these tapes. I have a year's worth. I also have it backed up on audio. I had a tape recorder in case the camera failed. The tapes are self-evident. You will not have to bring in Hercule Poirot to figure out what's going on in these tapes. You could set it up anywhere. You have a nice screen right here. The Elks Hall, Oddfellows Hall, any hall. I'll give times, dates, I'll narrate it, the cast of characters, I'll make the popcorn. Look at these tapes. Get the powers that be to look at these tapes because you have no ombudsman. You have no oversight. And if something isn't done fairly soon, there'll be no trees left in the county. It'll look like Easter Island. There'll be no Esha in Morro Bay. Morro Bay will be Muck Bay. And if the developers are allowed to get their way, they'll probably put the sewer plant on top of the library in Los Osos. Where is your ombudsman? Finally, Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "A foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds." You need some big minds. You need to get an ombudsman for oversight. You're a clear and present danger in this county.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Taylor, followed by Al Barrow.
Good morning. Good morning, U.S. Supervisors. My name is George Taylor, an advocate for a reasonably priced sewer system for Los Osos. I'm here to point out the advantages of the septic tank effluent pump system, STEP, envisioned by Los Osos by the Ripley Pacific team, versus an inappropriate gravity collection of sewage effluent. Full gravity collection for Los Osos was rejected by the Solutions Group in 1998 by the voters. STEP collection is septic tank effluent pump collection. It's typically one-third the cost of gravity sewers. Gravity collection is not appropriate in our hilly, high groundwater environment, requiring 11 lift stations and 750 manholes and many grinder pumps. In the sand dunes environment, the cost of installing and maintaining gravity collection is inordinately costly. The case for gravity collection is very weak, because it is the least environmentally protective method of sewering Los Osos. In regards to protecting the potable water, groundwater in Los Osos, if the recharge of the lower aquifer only is partially successful, we will need to offset that safe basin yield by reducing pumping and purple pipe, large urban uses, parks, schools, golf courses, residential landscape that will reduce the overall pumping and reserves and reverse saltwater intrusion in our aquifer. That will avoid purchase of expensive state water or expensive treatment of unpotable water to potability, both which are extremely expensive. Purple pipe. It is a system to return treated effluent, used water, to the community to be used in outside use. Where gravity sewers will leak into our aquifer containing our aquifer, contaminating our aquifer with raw sewage.
Sir Taylor, would you conclude, please? Your time is up.
I will conclude with that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Barrow, followed by, is it Joey Rucano?
I don't know exactly how to get this on the screen.
Okay, why don't we get Joey to come forward first, and we'll get you some help, Mr. Barrow. Mr. Rucano? No.
It's on.
No. Okay, let's get Mr. Rucano going. And
It's on.
If you don't mind, Mr. Rucano.
Not at all.
My apologies. Mr.
Can you put it on again, please?
What I'm talking about, my name is Al Barrow. Good morning.
Good morning.
And I'm following George Taylor up a similar conversation about affordable sewers in Los Osos. I don't know if this is going to work very well. There we go. Montgomery Watson designed the sewer, and in March 2001, their project update had a lot of misinformation or information that turned out to be inaccurate. And some examples of that is they didn't give the sludge credit. The treatment was about $6.5 million. That was not included in that. And their comparison with step collection and pond treatment, there is about $35 million in savings to be had. Let me see if I can find this one. Normally somebody runs this for us, but it shows here there is a potential savings of about $38 million by using a step collection system. And I hope Paavo is watching this. I'm going to leave you a copy of this. One of the problems with comparing step and gravity collection, which is, as Mr. Taylor says, 70% of the cost of a project, the manholes go down to 22 feet deep as well as the collection system, whereas you can directional bore shallow, small diameter pipes in a step collection. The septic tanks act as primary treatment as well as a collection system. So those benefits were not attributed in Montgomery-Watson comparison. A few other items are that the 8 lift stations, the 750 manholes are not required in a step collection system, which makes it less problematic. Another issue is the pipe slope, which of 1/16 of an inch, what 2/3 of the design was, does not really produce the required 2 foot per second flow necessary for gravity. So we're going to end up with a good deal of odor and a lot more maintenance. And in closing, I would say that the gravity is really an obsolete in our location for a number of reasons, including the hilly terrain. Mid-Valley Engineering, who is experts in collection systems with 100 employees, say they would not put a gravity system in Los Osos environment. So I ask you to direct your staff to look at these documents. I have a CD and I have some papers, and I'll be glad to give any other information I can. This was, by the way, designed by a $4 billion company, a step collection system already designed at no charge for the community. And that is available to you all as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rocano, followed by Julie Rodwald.
Honorable Board, staff, friends, and friends at home, Joey Rocano with the Ocean Outfall Group. At this hopeful time, I believe it is premature to exclude consideration of any treatment methods, because throughout this process, we have all maintained that everything must be on the table. All styles, fashions, and methods of treatment should be considered. It also defeats common sense to consider rehiring Montgomery Watson Harza, the contractor who was found to have illegally backdated contracts. Now, recently, there have been two major conferences on the Central Coast pertaining to water quality. So coastal protection is on our minds, all of us. And I also recently attended the World Oceans Conference in Long Beach, California. And the consensus was that North American water quality issues would best be addressed through creation of a national network of interconnected regional systems. Now, in less than 3 weeks, the watershed-wide waste discharge requirement becomes state law, compelling all municipalities and their satellites, including state parks that have more than a mile of infrastructure, to file and create a sewer master plan. Now, a regional full tertiary system qualifies for monies not available to the myopic sewers currently proposed in the area. Now, with Los Osos, Cayucas, and Morro Bay all needing wastewater upgrades and lined up 1, 2, 3 on the coast, only a regional plan seems to make sense. It's been said that yesterday is gone, and if we try to recapture it, we can only lose tomorrow. And I have faith in this board, in the community, and in the process. And in that spirit, I thank you for your leadership, and I urge you to take a close look at a regional plan for the Central Coast. Thank you for this opportunity to address you.
Thank you. In absence of Mr. Rodwald, Mr. Harry will report. Then we Julie
thank
Packard.
You, Mr. Asajan. Oh, Julie had to leave, and she apologizes because she had to meet the visitors from Ukraine in her office. And she wishes to remind listeners and viewers that Monday, October the 23rd, is the last day to register to vote for the November 7th election, and it was signed, thanks, Julie. And I would also like to put my two bits worth in and say, everybody get out and vote.
Ms. Thacker, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning. I am Julie Thacker, and I am a director with the Los Osos Community Services District. This morning, I'd like to talk about accounting. On October 3rd, your board approved spending $2 million in pursuit of a wastewater solution for the community of Los Osos, with a staff report that doesn't even mention the Los Osos Community Services District. I'd like to know if we, the taxpayers of San Luis Obispo County, will see an accounting of those dollars. I'd like to know if an accounting will include your staff's work on the dissolution. I know our staff, our lawyers alone, cost $40,000 to the district. I'd like to know if an accounting will include your staff's work on the lawsuit, ironically filed on October 3rd in bankruptcy court against our district, a lawsuit that I believe could have been avoided with a telephone call to the district. I'd like to know if an accounting will explain the $29,000 increase to one public works staffer who happens to be a CPA, and will that accounting explain the hiring of two others when in 1998 one public works employee, George Gibson, was tasked with the pursuit of a wastewater solution for Los Osos. I'd like to know if an accounting will explain why your staff is interested in hiring consultants that led the community of Los Osos into a mess. I'd like to know if the county will be accountable for the issuing of a grading permit for the downtown Tri-W site on September 20th, 2005, just days before the Measure B was passed by the voters of Los Osos that prevents a sewer from being built at that site. Measure B is still law. I want an accounting for my information, for the citizens that I represent, and you should have an accounting for the citizens that you represent. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Lindy Owen, followed by Chuck Sesenia.
Lindy Owen, Los Osos. I come to speak today about gravity sewers because I was extremely disturbed at October 10th's meeting to hear Noel King say that we will not be looking at alternatives on collection. That is not exactly what was promised to Los Osos, and I appreciate that Mr. Patterson brought it up, but I want it to come back to the table. The problem with a gravity sewer, and I'll just give a little mini report because it's really not hard to understand. You take all the raw waste from a home, you let people flush and forget. There's no environmental care being done out of everybody's home. People throw everything they don't want to have down the toilet and their sinks and drains. It goes into large pipes that are put up to 20-some feet underground. They're connected. In Los Osos, we have shifting sand. We have earthquake activity. Those pipes, when they break, there is no way to know that they're broken. Those pipes will be running through our upper aquifer. We are expected to drink the upper aquifer. Why would you not look at the effluent collection system? They are working all over the country. It's not that it's a problem to make a large effluent collection, because that hasn't quite been done yet. All an effluent collection is a series of small collection systems that take the septic tank, holds your waste, and it's certified, it's a solid, safe place to store it. It's managed on an annual basis. It has checks and balances, and when anything leaks, and then the effluent that was going out into a leach field is collected in small pipes, we would not even be disturbing the native ruins and middens and burial sites, because the natives have said that they would much rather have the directional bore go through these, and it's only 4 feet deep, so it's not going down to where we cannot get to it for repairs, and we will not be uncovering their grave sites and causing all the disturbance that will happen with a full-on gravity system. We're talking 42 miles of streets that are not well cared for, were never well cared for, and you want to tear them up, and then we additionally have to pay to replace all of them. I want you to understand that gravity will not work in Los Osos unless you really choose to bankrupt our entire community. And I would like to hear Mr. Noel King come back and explain that everything is to be looked at. That was the promise. I thought we were being assisted in coming up with an alternative sewer. This does not sound like assistance. This sounds like Montgomery Watson wants to get back to work, and there are people that are very willing to give them those contracts. It can't happen.
Mrs. Senia, followed by Bill Thoma.
Good morning, Chairman Ashajian and fellow supervisors. A couple of weeks ago from this very lectern, we heard that perception is everything, and I'd like to offer a corollary to that, and that has to deal with labels.
Want to give us your name for the record,
excuse
please.
Me, Chuck Sesenia, resident of Los Osos and a member of the Board of Directors of the Community Services District. The corollary to perception is everything that I'd like to offer you has to do with labels and how difficult they can be to remove once they are applied, even misapplied. Our board was first labeled anti-sewer because we didn't support the Tri-W project. We're then labeled uncooperative in spite of the fact that last fall we compromised on the collection system for an out-of-town location for our treatment plant. This compromise was sabotaged by the same people who called us anti-sewer, taxpayers watch. We stood down all summer as AB 2701 was drafted by everyone except us. We haven't sold Tri-W. We didn't pass a baby bee ordinance, which would have made siting at the Tri-W site difficult, if not impossible. We fought dissolution efforts all summer by the taxpayers' watch supporters of our exiled board members. I would call that cooperation. What is not cooperative is a lawsuit over issues that we're all in agreement with. Our accounting practices did need to be straightened out. And I noted in the Tribune article, if I can believe what the Tribune said, that your concerns stemmed from the audit that ended with the fiscal year of June of 05, prior to the recall. So these issues have been around for a while. The reason I say if the Tribune is to be believed, because they are the entity that chose to chastise Los Osos for a 70% voter turnout in our recall election. That's pretty good. And to suggest that the election results would have been different if more people had voted, I think is a real stretch, and I'd really like to know how they can say that. Since elected, we've tried to implement the environmentally preferred alternative identified in the project report and environmental impact report prepared by Crawford, Motari, and Clark, and Montgomery, Watson, Harza. Same consultants that you want to now hire for another $2 million to update reports. I wonder how the conclusions could change. I know that your Public Works Department doesn't favor the conclusions of those reports regarding the environmentally preferred options, and they've asked for compelling evidence. And I'd like to suggest that, again, Thursday night at our board meeting, we'll be offering more compelling evidence that there are other options to be examined. And thank you for the opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you. Mr. Toma, followed by Michael Wynn.
Good morning, board. My name is Bill Toma. I'm a lifelong resident of San Luis Obispo and co-chair with Dodie Williams of Citizens for Measure J. We're a volunteer organization getting information out to get the facts out instead of the misrepresentations that have been portrayed of that project. I was here about 6 to 8 years ago and watched former city council person Jan Marks beg this body to send the project back to the city, send the Delitos back to the city. This board was made up of a different group. At that time, it was previously Mayor Peg Bernard and current and Board of Supervisor at the time, and she stuck her index finger out at that group and said, now, okay, well, if we send this back to the city, you got to get it done in the city. Well, they failed. Jan has since then done everything she can to undermine the planning process and derail a great project. This project is far better than the one that was presented at that time and has addressed the issues in all ways that have been brought to you. The lies and misstatements by opposition is just their desperation shining through because they know they have no basis in fact to criticize the project. The property has been identified for the intended use since before 1977 by the city itself. The Delitio project is a solution to the traffic problems that continue to be noted, not the problem. It will not take anything away from any other county project, as you know. The facts are that project will support itself on the tax revenues alone. Mr. Mike McCluskey, who was a former city public works director, eloquently endorsed the project in his viewpoint. He doesn't even live in the community anymore, but wrote an article as the solution to the problem. Ron DeCarli was quoted as saying that the overpass will never happen without the Delitio project in the New Times. Ron is the slow cog director, as you know. The Tribune on Sunday, and I ask everyone out there to read that article. They did an outstanding job of outlining the issues, the solutions, and unveiling the lies of the opposition. Please support Measure J and the right of the people to decide the outcome. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you. Mr. Wynn, followed by Lisa Schicker.
Good morning, Chairman Ashajan, supervisors. My name is Mike Wynn. I'm from Napomo. And I always find these trips to your board educational. I discovered today that democracy is flourishing in the Ukraine, that my citizenship was an accident, although I always thought it was due to the grace of God. So that's what you get for being a Christian. And I discovered that gravity is extinct in Los Osos, and I thought it was one of those things you could always depend on. But today I'm here to join my voice to what Eric Greening said earlier about advisory committees. And I would encourage you to somehow take hold of these and do some fine-tuning to get them back on course. Every time an advisory committee acts uncivilly or irrationally, it reflects on the community. when that happens in my own community, I'm embarrassed. And yet they're all people that have volunteered and they have good hearts and good intentions, but they just don't always work right. But I must say to you that they also reflect on you. These advisory committees are your creation, and they're here to serve you, and you are in a position to help give them some guidelines that will make them more effective. I would encourage you to have them refocus on giving you advice. They're often inhabited by people that wish to control, and when they give advice, they should give you the full complexity of the advice, who the minorities were and why they voted as they did, not just who won the last vote. I would encourage you to advise them that no bylaws be updated until your county council has had a chance to vet them briefly. Not a lot of staff time, but a trained mind could look at some of these and fix them very easily. I would encourage you to advise them to operate within the Brown Act. Even though they're not legally required to, they certainly gain credibility, and they follow the spirit of the law if they will do so. And that also applies for conflict of interest rules, which they may be not subject to. I'm not an attorney. But I think common sense says that they will have more public respect, and you will give them more weight if you know that the advice you're given is not being guided by ulterior motives. Last, I would encourage you to put a work group together, something representative and broad, that would come up with a model handbook with some model bylaws, which all advisory councils could look at and learn from. I'm not saying you should dictate exactly what should be in them, but I think that model language and some standards would be very helpful. These I offer strictly in a constructive way. Thank you.
Thank you. Shaker, followed by David Dugan.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Lisa Schicker. I'm the president of the Los Osos Community Services District. I'm here today to talk about four things. The first thing I wanted to talk about was I wasn't here for Noel King's comments 2 weeks ago, but I did write you a letter on October 6th, and I wanted to make sure you received the letter. And thank you. And it has to do with our relationship with your board in the next couple of years. And we're very encouraged, and we appreciate that you've allowed Mr. Ogren to meet with us and so we can share ideas and work on the interagency agreement that was promised this summer and to work on issues that are of mutual concern. But what Mr. King said, I'm out in the community every day. I'm out there quite a bit, and it caused a huge ripple and a huge anxiety. And I think your board can clarify and put this to rest today. The board needs to evaluate all alternatives as promised. All alternatives should be on the table. It's, in my opinion, from being out in the public and hearing from many public for hours and hours and hours, it's the only way that we're going to make a wise use of that $2 million investment. We want success. We want to work with you, and we want success. It's very important that all alternatives are on the table. And that includes everything that's included in the Ripley report. The Ripley report is not the Ripley preferred alternative. There is a distinguishing factor there. He analyzes and evaluates all projects for environmental, technical, sludge reasons, energy concerns, all of the above. So, again, encouraging increased collaboration and cooperation. All alternatives on the table will go far. Your investment will go far. It is the Los Osos citizens who will be asked to pay for this, and we want to have a fair vetting of all alternatives. Also, we do invite you and your staff to attend Thursday night's meeting. We have something really exciting and wonderful to share with you, 7 p.m. We hope that you can send staff. We hope that you can attend. It's another option workshop on the table, and we need to have your participation. We cordially invite you. And finally, the last thing I want to talk about is the lawsuit. The lawsuit was a surprise to us because we are encouraging cooperation and collaboration. A phone call would have been appreciated. And I think that you would have found that we, our board, completely agrees with the premises of your lawsuit. In fact, that's why most of us got involved with the CSD and running in the first place. And we are taking remedies, and we have taken remedies, and we're short on money right now. So filing lawsuits and spending more money, as you heard about the LAFCO expenses, et cetera, are of concern to us. And we pledge to this cooperation and collaboration. And a lawsuit isn't a good way to go if you can pick up the phone and talk to us. And we encourage that in the future. We were unaware that happened. I heard from the newspaper it happened. So I'd just like to ask you to please pick up the phone. And I think we have many shared concerns, and I'd be happy to share all of that with you. Thank you.
Mr. Dugan, followed by, is it Galen Ricard?
My name is Dave Dugan, Los Osos, and a candidate for now existing CSD because we didn't get dissolved. CEQA, Port of Cologne, Federal Clean Water and State Water Clean Water Act. If you read those carefully, you're going to find that all alternative studies include all alternatives, including collection systems. You also, somebody mentioned last meeting, there's a 500-pound gorilla in the room called the Regional Water Quality Control Board. Well, the person that started speaking about the Regional Water Quality Control Board is our own second district supervisor, Shirley Bianchi. I was not aware that the Regional Water Quality Control Board had elected her to her seat, nor that she was the spokesperson for the Regional Water Control Board, but instead for the people in the second district. I would like to also remind her that even in their own enforcement policy, the regional board and the state boards, water boards, are not allowed to dictate site, system, and to include collection. They cannot enter into it. They are forbidden, restricted to saying you can or cannot use this system. And if you want me to, I'll go ahead and get the codes for you. CDOs. Come January 1st, nobody has purview over the wastewater problems in Los Osos. CSD doesn't, and your board at come the 1st does not have a purview because you hadn't voted to take on the sewer system. It's in limbo. The people of the district will not be able to do anything about their septic tanks because there's no authority that's in charge. Think about that. 2701 puts wastewater in Los Osos septic system in limbo. The individuals of Los Osos at that time, come January 1st, will not be able to comply to hook up to a sewer system for at least a year until you guys decide whether or not you want the project. I would hope that this board, come January 1st, would contact the Regional Water Quality Control Board and have them hold these CDOs in abeyance and not issue any more notices until your board has decided whether or not it's going to take on the sewer project. Because come January 1st, neither your board or the LOCSD has purview over the septic systems. Nobody does. It's wide open. Perhaps somebody can establish a sanitation district between now and the time you guys decide. Maybe that could happen.
Good idea.
And in actuality, that is in the works, and hopefully you guys will listen. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ricard, followed by Gail McPherson.
Good morning. Galen Ricard, Baywood Park. Especially over the next few months, there's tremendous opportunity in Los Osos and for Los Osos. The county is investing $2 million for a full and complete analysis of wastewater approaches. Yes, the direction of the county is gravity. It's what you know, it's what most of us know. For many of us, a big box conventional system is familiar, reassuring, it's safe, and it feels like mission accomplished. The county is committed to getting its money's worth with a full and complete analysis of all approaches. And that means a full review of the Ripley plan, including the preferred alternative, and creates an opportunity to educate all of us on all options and opportunities. It is clear that the intent on all sides is an analysis that's full and complete and impartial, so that we can reach a fully informed choice of what is the most sustainable, the most holistic, and cost-effective solution. Thank you.
Ms. McPherson.
Good morning. I can just go right off of Galen's comments because they incorporate so much of what I want to say.
But would you give us your name for the record first?
Okay, Gail McPherson.
Thank you.
Los Osos. What I'm familiar with is that June 19th staff report that you voted on and made part of the work that is being done in behalf of Los Osos for the wastewater treatment project. In that report, there were about 50 strategies to look at, and in that, it looked at the last known agreement, which had to do with a pond system out of town and a gravity system that was already in design, and so you looked at that. But June 19th was prior to when the Ripley report was actually completed, and I think that that's where the confusion lies. And I think a simple request would be to update that June 19th staff report to incorporate the things that have happened during the time that 2701 was being worked on. And that would be a simple way of just updating that to include the things that people are concerned about. I know the full intent of the staff is to look at all alternatives, and certainly in the collection system, that is a process. There are more than two types of collection systems. There's actually about six different types, and some of them don't bore in as deep, and some use pressure and pumping, more than you'd ever want to know. But there are many other alternatives I think the intent is to look at. One concern is that in the misunderstandings that we'll get off on a wrong foot here, and I don't think anybody here wants to do that, and I know that the people at the LOCSD don't want to do that, and the citizens in the community really would like this to be a fair process. I trust the process. I've delivered 8 major projects, and I know the process can work as long as the politics can stay at bay, and we need to guard against that, and I know that there are lots of people who are wanting to do that, to guard against that. So I just appreciate any kind of an update to that June 19th staff report so that we could incorporate all the other alternatives. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. That concludes our public comment period. I'm sorry, sir. And what did you put it under?
I filled out a slip.
For?
Public comment.
On what issue?
Del Rio Ranch.
That's a consent agenda item. Does anybody wish to comment during public comment period on items that are not on our agenda, including consent? Seeing none, we'll conclude the public comment period. We'll move on to a short...
I'd like to say something.
Ms. Bianchi?
Yeah, one of the things I would like to reemphasize is that our Public Works Department has a website for people to look up information on the Los Osos sewer system, wastewater system, whatever you want to call it. And that web page can be accessed, and I didn't bring the slips down with me with the exact web address, but it can be accessed through the county's website. Go to departments, click on Public Works, and a click on departments, then on Public Works, and there's a Los Osos wastewater project will come up. That is for the latest information, and there is a section there where you can email the Public Works Department that will be dealing with the wastewater system. I would urge everyone, rather than listening to rumor or going off at a tangent, to please go to that website and get the accurate information from our Public Works Department, and they will be updating that website frequently. I'm not sure exactly how frequently. And I did want to comment on Mr. Dugan's statement about the Regional Water Board. The Regional Water Board cannot tell the district what kind of a sewer system it can have, but it can certainly tell the district that it will not approve, or the county, because the county will have the authority for the sewer system after January. They can say, we will not accept that type, which is what they did with the ponding system.
Okay, thank you. There's a popular demand for a short break. We'll return at 10:40.
Booz Ranch fighting the Department of Water Resources campaign to take their property. But all along, I was fighting for proper and just application of existing laws, including the findings that need to be made for a resolution of necessity, such as that a project is being designed consistent with the greatest public good and the least private injury. Those laws are on the books. We have them. We don't need a blunt instrument like Proposition 90. We just need to follow them and respect them. What Proposition 90 would have done nothing to save the down-home Blues Ranch, because they weren't fighting over money. They were fighting to keep their way of life. Proposition 90 could have made them rich. It would base the valuation on the speculative future land values rather than the present values. It would thus skyrocket, if it passed, the costs of such public works as the Nacimiento Pipeline, the Willow Road Interchange, and the Los Osos Sewer, and would likely lead to delays in all of these and many other public works projects because of the difficulty of coming up with the speculative land valuation amounts. While it uses the initiative process designed for the people of California to write their own laws, Proposition 90 was written by out-of-state interests with the goal of elevating speculative private profits against the public interest. In the guise of protecting property owners from takings, it actually enforces government, that is, taxpayer, givings to the favored few. It would stymie the application of conditions of approval that would protect the public interest in traffic congestion, pollution, and threats to public health and safety, and undermine your ability to implement the smart growth principles you recently adopted, and indeed make it hard to stick with our existing general plans. Private property owners would suffer because their neighbors would be substantially less constrained in changing neighborhood character and introducing incompatible uses that would lower the values of the people who are not doing these things. CSAC is right to strongly oppose this misbegotten measure, which was not written by Californians not to solve our problems. And you are right to join CSAC and the League of Cities and many others in opposing Proposition 90. No on 90. Please pass B-17.
Thank you. Mr. Mannion and Ms. Dean.
Daniel Mannion, San Luis County Public Works Department. Item B-15A is a parcel map CO01-314 in the town of Oceano, and we had some technical difficulties. We've made corrections to the resolution for accepting a navigation easement and the grant of navigation easement. I've run this by County Council and Vicki Shelby, our county clerk, and I recommend that we not pull this item but make the corrections specifically to delete San Luis County Regional Airport and insert Oceano County Airport. And I'll
and Mrs. Dean agrees with that. Yeah. Would you please give us your name for the record and speak so?
Pamela Dean, Oceano. Yes, I do agree with it wholeheartedly.
Thank you.
Thank you very
Mr.
much.
Mr. Mannion, that's it?
Yes.
Okay.
With these revisions, I'll get back with the clerk and make those corrections.
Thank you. Does Madam Clerk or Mr. Counsel have anything to add to this item? Okay, thank you both. Okay. Dane Spencer, followed by Jen Marks.
Dane Spencer, I'm a victims and people civil rights advocate. I do it pro bono, and I'm here today on B-12, the Measure J in Delidio Ranch. Most recently, I was a lead advocate in the Denny's crime murder scene against the Tribune on not putting that forth to the public and making it public, which the courts ruled in the favor that I and a lot of the other victims' rights were right on that. But here I'm today to agree with the Sunday opinion column from the Tribune. I think they were right on what they had to say in their full-page ad, from planning to traffic, Measure J passes the test. And I'm here as a rights of Mr. Delidio and to go against the county coalition to say that I believe, in my opinion, there should be a criminal investigation in regards to them, because my facts and the facts of the paper, they are misleading the people. And I believe there's an actual civil rights criminal intent to defraud. I really believe this in my heart. I don't know why a lady who's honored here today with a freeway, Mrs. Madonna, she's doing the same thing. Car things are going in. She's doing the same exact thing. Her rights have never been violated. On the contrary, I look at Mr. Delidio's rights. For 14 years, his rights have been violated. And I got to look at the county coalition, a.k.a. Slow, Save Slow. And I look at the paper here, five crucial facts that they've misled, I think, intently, on purpose, the people. I'll give you an example. I work for a retirement center. The older lady came to me and says, you know, the Walmart's going in at Delidio Ranch? They're still using that tune, using words like toxin. I mean, I think you have to follow the money here to see what's happening here, and it's very dangerous. It goes to the criminal intent. I asked that the Board of Supervisors actually open an investigation into the regards to the county coalition, who is right over here on Monterey Street. I want to read you this quote, final quote here, that the Tribune itself said. Delidio opponents stepped outside the normal planning channels when they used referendum process to defeat the city-approved marketplace last year. To say that the Delidio can't seek his day in court of public opinion using similar tools is nothing less than shameful hypocrisy. And I agree with them. And I give you five other points that you can look in this article. I hope everybody reads it, that they have misled and lied, okay? And I believe, like I said, you follow the money and you'll find the crime. It always comes down to the bottom line, money. But the sad thing about this, I believe a family, a man, and people's rights have been violated intently, okay? And I say with criminal intent, because here's an organization that's not willing to expose its members, not expose where its money's come from, but they want Mr. Delidio to expose from his firstborn to 14 years of excruciating.
Mr. Sensor, thank you, sir. Your time is up. Ms. Marks, followed by Kimberly Daniels.
Thank you. My name is Jan Hale Marks, and I'm a citizen of San Luis Obispo. I want to thank you, Chair Akajian, and the Board of Supervisors for hearing me today. I also would like to compliment Julie Rodewald and her staff for their fair and impartial conduct throughout this process and their adherence to the highest professional standards. I want to say that the County Coalition for Local Control does not resort to personal attacks or innuendo. We are relying on the facts as presented through public agencies. And I just want to list the public agencies that have come out and warned the county against Measure J. County staff, including the Building and Planning Department, is warning that there could be some unintended consequences of the initiative relative to the changes proposed for the ag and open space element of the general plan. The county council, in the impartial analysis, is warning that the measure, if it passes, may have some really strong legal problems. We urge the people to read the impartial analysis of Measure J, to read the initiative itself, and to read the arguments on both sides. Today, I would like to address the missing mitigation measures that are not in the initiative project, that were in the former project that was proposed in the city of San Luis Obispo. This is a really different project. It has a freestanding private sewer problem. I mean sewer plant. It's going to be a problem like the Los Osos community faces if this measure passes. And the other thing is that it has no mitigation for the 30,000-plus trips that this giant shopping center would create. So when you look at the mitigation measures, impacts, the severe and unavoidable impacts in the former projects, please remember that this is not the former project. This is a brand-new project that has never had an EIR. It never will have an EIR. It's the build-first-plan-later mode of operating, which has proved so disastrous in third world countries, and we also see it in Paso Robles, where now the property owners are being asked to get together and finance the road improvements for 46 and 101. This would be a terrible precedent for everyone in the county if the wishes of the people of San Luis Obispo were overridden by this initiative. So I urge your board to take a stand against Measure J. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. H.
Just a slight correction, if I may, I think unintentionally, but I need to point out Ms. Howell Marks suggested that I think the planning department and county council had taken a position against Measure J, and as you know, county departments haven't taken a position and would not take a position for or against. So I think she identified some comments they may have made that pointing out issues that can be taken by people who may be opposed to Measure J and advocated, but the departments themselves don't take positions on these items.
I agree with that. I'm sorry if I created any confusion.
Ms. Marks,
I figured it was unintentional. Thank you.
We recognize that. Kimberly Daniels, followed by Mr. Kovacs.
Good morning, Chairman Slagian and members of the board. My name is Kimberly Daniels. I'm the general manager of the County Employees Association. We represent approximately 1,700 county employees. I want to publicly state that the association supports the salary increase that's proposed for the Board of Supervisors. SLOSIA firmly believes in parity in salaries for all county employees, including the board. Today, we will be delivering a packet of information for each board member that addresses inequities that exist in the job classes that we represent. Thus far, we've been unable to rectify these inequities through the negotiation process. We are respectfully requesting that the board review the information and help us address those inequities. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kovacs, followed by Bruce Gibson.
Yes, I am Michael Kovacs, and I would like to comment on B1, item B1 in the consent agenda items groups. 18 years ago, when I started coming here to these board meetings, $40,000 per year were the compensation, full compensation of our supervisors, determined by a certain percentage of the County Superior Court judges' salaries. Without public approval, without public, who is your employer, we are your employer. This has been changed to the prevailing wages, prevailing in similar counties employees. The prevailing wage law approved by the public in this county were limited to county employees. You are not a county employee, neither one of you. You are our employees. Now, in front of you, there is an 11% increase proposed that will increase your annual base salary to about $80,000, doubling what it was when I started coming here. And in addition to that, another 11% raise is contemplated for next fiscal year for you in order to catch up, in quote, catch up with those five counties selected. We, the public, passed Measure M to have your compensation controlled solely by your employer, by us, the public. Well, the following illegal improprieties are included in this proposal. One, the prevailing wage law passed by the public then is not applicable to supervisors and other elected employees, county employees' compensation. Not at all. It has been just conveniently changed unilaterally by someone or someones back 8, 9, 10 years ago or when it was. Second, the county has selected 5 counties. I mean, the proposal include 5 selected so-called similar counties used.
Thank you, Mr. Kovacs. Mr. Gibson, followed by Kathy. Is it
I urge
Burnett?
You to disapprove this proposal, Kacho, Chairman.
I guess I bite the bullet. Mr. Gibson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Bruce Gibson, Planning Commissioner from the 2nd District. Before you today to speak in support of Measure B-17, which is to say to urge your strong opposition to State Proposition 90. This is perhaps the most deceptive piece of state initiative that I've seen come forward in my life. It comes forward under a noble banner, which is to prevent the abuse of eminent domain by local governments. And I think that a simple policy statement by your board could lay those concerns to rest very quickly. But buried in the legalese of this proposition is language that would absolutely destroy this county's ability to plan, manage, and regulate its land use. Mr. Greening gave an eloquent and complete description of the consequences, most of them intended, I think, that lurk here. But our Planning Commission has worked hard on issues such as affordable housing, smart growth, rural land preservation, and a number of other things that would be completely impossible should Proposition 90 pass. Your county administration has given you a nicely reasoned and well-balanced description. I would urge you to add a note of urgency to your resolution, if not a note of outrage. As a private citizen with a minute left, let me also speak in support of item B7. This is a chance to work with the Trust for Public Land, which is a noted land trust that has done a number of important projects in this county, from the Estero Bluffs north of Cayucas to the Piedras Blancas Motel on the Hearst Ranch coast. They have a fine track record working with public agencies in securing important pieces of land, and in particular, important coastal pieces of land, and I would urge your enthusiastic support of that resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Kathy, followed by Michael Wynn.
Good morning. My name is Kathy Jeanette, and I'm a concerned citizen from San Luis Obispo, and I'm here to support Measure J. I've thought extensively about this project, and I realize what a difficult decision this is for all of you, and I thank you for all your time sorting out all these complex issues that have been brought to you today. I've just really realized that it's much easier for people to vote no on this issue because it is so complex, and the opposition is trying to instill fear and doubt to reinforce this position that just vote no and we won't have to deal with these issues. This project has been researched and studied more than any other development in the county in the last 15 years. On Sunday, the Tribune did a great job at releasing their research concerning this initiative, and they came out with the truth. They uncovered no validity to the opposition's concerns and claims. The Tribune is now openly supporting Measure J. The concerns have been exaggerated and dramatized to reinforce fear and doubt. I love this town, and I don't want it to change in an unfavorable way, nor do I want it to be stagnated and be unwilling to make positive change. And thinking further about this, I realize that if this measure goes through, the city, the county, and the design firm are going to have to work together to make this project a success. Maybe we should focus on the bigger issue, which is not only is this project a beautiful, environmentally friendly project, but it's going to generate enormous amounts of money to the area. I hope that you will do the right thing, not the easy thing, and support positive changes for San Luis Obispo. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Wynn, followed by Morgan Rafferty.
Good morning again, Chairman Ashajan, supervisors. My name is Mike Wynn. I'm speaking now as the chairman of your Water Resources Advisory Committee. On Wednesday, October 4th, the RAC voted unanimously with 4 abstentions to urge your board to oppose Prop 90. There was an extensive discussion that led to that. We understood that the U.S. Supreme Court misfunctioned in the Kelo decision. which has triggered corrective legislation in dozens of states and thousands of other venues all over the country. And I would agree with Mr. Gibson's comments that the purpose behind some of this was noble, was intended to achieve a good thing, that the citizens of the state of California should not have their land taken by a government body for some private use. But unfortunately, Prop 90 goes well beyond that. And it would have a number of harmful effects if passed. It would reduce your board's ability to plan land use. In addition, it would expand compensation beyond what is current, that is that you would have to pay the current price of something, to include an open-ended notion of economic loss in the future. And further, it would transfer significant authority from the legislative branch, which you represent, to the courts. For this reasons, and because specifically as the RAC, we see this costing water source, water supply, and water distribution costs to go up significantly in many projects that are currently underway. We urge you to oppose this. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Rafferty, followed by Dave Cox.
Good morning. I'm here to urge you to support item B7 and authorize the county to proceed in purchasing the land at Pirates Cove. It's an invaluable piece of property for our county citizens, and we want to see it kept in its natural state with its present use. And EcoSlow has long worked for this, and we have, we're willing to work with the county in management, keeping the beach clean and organizing volunteers, and that's part of our management proposal that's been waiting around for this to happen, and we just urge you to support this. It's a great opportunity for the county to work with this trust and acquire this property for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Cox?
Thank you, Chairman Kajian and board members. My name is Dave Cox. I'm a paid advocate for the Delidio family, working on the Measure J project in favor of Measure J, obviously. I want to thank Supervisor Lenthal and the entire board for their participation in the four committee meetings that were held in late summer concerning Measure J. I really am very appreciative of all of the staff work that went into it, participation from the other groups. After 14 years and literally 40 meetings and public discussions about this project, numerous studies on the economy and economic impact on traffic, et cetera, I think that the project now has been studied to death. And it's time for the measure to go on to the voters and let the voters decide what will happen. We're 3 weeks away from voting day, from election day, and I think we've studied it long enough. And I know I am expressing the opinion of the Delidio family when I say that. So thanks again to the board and to the staff for the report.
Thank you. Anyone else wishes to comment on consent agenda items? Seeing none, bring it back to supervisors, starting with Ms. Bianchi. Any items that you would like to pull?
Yes, I'd like to pull B12, please, for discussion. Since it's a receive and file, we don't need a separate vote.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Lenthal?
Yes, B7 for comment.
Mr. Patterson?
No, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Ovid?
No items, sir.
Okay. Just a reminder that item B1, the date has been changed. Instead of October 24th, it will be heard on November 7th. With that in numerical order, we go to Supervisor Lenthal with B7.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I know we've gone long this morning, but I think it's important to recognize county staff. We had an opportunity here that came not quite at the 11th hour, but I'll use the analogy of 10:30 to come together to deal with this land. And we have, to our credit, Dwayne Leib, General Services, Pete Jenny, and our audience here, that they and their staff put this together literally, and I can't thank them enough. We have a window of opportunity here. The phones and emails and the contacts I've had is that if we can complete this in a timely fashion, even though we started so late, that people are very, very happy, and I just want to thank both of you and your staff and also county admin, because we wouldn't be able to have this on the agenda if we didn't work after 5 o'clock on a couple of issues this last week. And I know Cammie's smiling down front was part of this. So I just want to thank county staff for really going the extra mile to make sure that we've got this done in a timely fashion.
Thank you. Ms. Bianchi, B12.
Yes, I usually don't wax eloquent on consent agenda items, or I should say preach or whatever. I'm not sure how eloquent it is. But this is one of those issues that leaves me with a feeling of schizophrenia, because I was raised in the culture that Mr. Delidio was raised in. And but I have my other foot very firmly in the environmental community with some of the members of the environmental community. Let me phrase it that way. So when shortly after I was elected to the board and this issue came to the board, I was a little annoyed when this board chose to appoint Supervisor Pinard and Supervisor Ashagian to work with the city of San Luis Obispo, because I had just come from the Planning Commission after 8 years, and I thought, of course, I knew a lot more than anybody else did. However, that being said, I convinced myself that, you know, they had more of the city of San Luis Obispo in their districts at that time than I had in mine, so, you know, I didn't make an issue out of it. However, you know, because it's not in my district, I didn't follow the exact plan that was put forth, you know, very closely. But, you know, if the city council of the city of San Luis Obispo, after all of the discussions, could accept it, you know, I was happy with that. It was, after all, under the purview of the city at that time, I guess. But then the city people, some of the people in the city of San Luis Obispo, put together the initiative to stop the project. And I thought, I didn't think that was a very good idea, but I didn't become involved in it at all. It wasn't something that I felt that I should be involved in. So the initiative passed, the project was stopped, and then Supervisor Lenthal was elected to 3rd District. And not too long after he was elected, he came in to see me, because we've known each other for years and years, and asked me what I thought about his putting together a committee to resolve the issue. Well, I thought that was a really great idea. I'm always in favor of getting people together in a room and talking issues out, because if everyone is willing to talk the issues out, oftentimes you can come up with a much better solution to a problem. And so, you know, I was really pretty disappointed when it seemed to me that some of the people on the committee were not, although I didn't attend any of them, were not all that eager to cooperate. And I'm not exactly sure who, what, where, or when. But then I was really annoyed when Mr. Delidio decided to have his own petition. Although I don't exactly know what the people in the city of San Luis Obispo thought they were doing with theirs, that Mr. Delidio wouldn't do exactly the same thing, but a little bit better. And I, up until this weekend, I honestly couldn't tell you whether I was going to vote, me personally, not this board, but me personally, whether I was going to vote yes or no. Until I had occasion to drive down Highway 101, and there is a project of some kind going in right next to the Delidio property, and where is the hoop-de-doo about that? There's no one complaining about that. And, you know, I was really, really pretty ticked. I ran it and raved at my husband all the way home. And
poor guy.
Well, he's used to it after all these years. He just sits there and nods and smiles. But the point I want to make is I'm going to vote no on Measure J. And the reason I'm going to vote no has nothing to do with whether Mr. Delidio is a nice man, because I'm sure that he is. I've only met him twice. He's not a longtime friend of mine. I don't know him, and he truly doesn't know me. I'm not going to vote no because necessarily I agree with the people in the city of San Luis Obispo who don't want that project. I'm going to vote no for the simple reason that that petition, and it's only the petition, the project may be the best project in the world, but that petition bypasses our county government planning process. And I got to thinking after I ranted all the way home, I've spent the last 26 years of my life trying to bring a rational planning process to this county. And I believe that that petition bypasses the county. It will not be up to our county planning staff to try to determine whether this is a good project or not, because our county planning staff has been bypassed. And I really, really don't think that this is a good thing for this county. And then what about the poor soul who doesn't have somebody from Texas and somebody from Orange County to help them put together a petition? They're stuck. They can't go out for a big petition drive and a big advertising campaign. And I don't think it's fair to the poor people in this county who have a project to bypass our county planning process. That's it.
Thank you. Would that entertain a motion for approval of the consent agenda items with the corrections?
I just want to state one thing. In conversation I had with Mr. Lindholm yesterday, I think the last statement about bypassing all processes in the county is incorrect. In my understanding in that conversation, Mr. Lindholm, that there still is a subdivision that needs to be worked on. There are other permit processes, and Mr. Lindholm, if you'd like to correct that, I would.
That the subdivision question is an open question at this point in time, but would appear that that issue will remain after the election if it passes. And I think we also discussed the fact that state agencies still retain their authority to review the project because the initiative measure relates simply to the county.
And that's what I stated, our county planning process.
I'm sorry? I moved for approval.
Okay, it's moved by Supervisor Lentil, seconded by Supervisor Ovid.
Wait a minute, and that's with the revisions to
B-15? Yeah.
I want to go through all the revisions because we've revised the revised.
Okay.
Item B1,
Madam Clerk?
Item B1 is to change the hearing date from October 24th to November 7th. B2 is to change the bid opening date from the 23rd to the 26th, I think it was. Right, the 23rd to the 26th, or 25th, excuse me. And then B15 is now for approval as amended.
Okay, with that, a roll call, please.
Mr. Lindholm?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Ashajian?
Aye. With that, if you'll introduce C1, please.
Item C1 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Scott Stokes of the Subdivision Review Board's approval of a request by Leslie and Janet Mallory for 4 conditional certificates of compliance conditioned to be merged into one parcel of 2.6 acres for the purpose of sale and or development, located on 2902 Geneseo Road, approximately 5 miles north of the community of Crested in the 1st District. Recommendation is for denial of the appeal and approving the conditional certificates of compliance.
Thank you. With that, Ms. Griffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. If I could have the clerk switch to
yeah,
the... As the clerk read into the record, this is an appeal of the Subdivision Review Board's approval of a conditional certificate of compliance. Excuse me. The property is located on the east side of Geneseo Road, south of the end of Mack Lane, approximately 5 miles north of the community of Creston. It's within the residential suburban land use category. There's a small patch of residential suburban located in this area that these parcels are included in. The total acreage of the site is about 2.6 acres. There's an existing single-family residence. There was, as you can see in this aerial, a 20,000-square-foot poultry barn that was located on the site that was constructed sometime in the 1950s. It has since been demolished. The request is for four conditional certificates of compliance. These parcels were created at a time when a map was necessary and a map was not filed. They were created through a deed. You'll note that they are below 1 acre with the exception of this parcel. The underlying lots, legal lots, were actually lots of the Paso Robles Orchard Company tract number one. They were all of lot four, all of lot five, all of lot six, all of lot seven. What the deed did was come in and create what's outlined here in the dark that divided these lots approximately in half, and this was done in violation of the Subdivision Map Act and local ordinances in effect at the time. The owner acquired interest in 1978. In 1978, the land use ordinance at the time required community water for parcels of less than 2.5 acres, and five service connections are required for the creation of a community water system. Therefore, the project is conditioned to merger into one parcel of 2.5 acres to be served by well and septic, as a community water system does not exist at this time, nor do five service connections exist at this time. The appeal issue was that the applicant is looking into getting additional water connections. Staff's response is that there are four parcels under control of the applicant. However, one of those parcels would have to be used for the community well, for the community water system. That means that parcel could not be developed or built on with a septic system. Therefore, the applicant only has three parcels under their control. They would need to find an additional two service connections in order to have those five service connections that are required, and no evidence has been submitted to staff at this time that those additional service connections exist. The rules in effect in 1978 would have allowed for the creation of this size parcel with community water system, and initially staff had recommended to the Subdivision Review Board that a community water system be established and that the four conditional certificates be granted for the individual parcels. However, when it became clear that five community service connections did not exist, staff did change their recommendation to the Subdivision Review Board, and the Subdivision Review Board ultimately agreed to combine the parcels into a single 2.5 acre lot that would support a well and septic system. And that is staff's recommendation to deny the appeal and uphold the Subdivision Review Board approval based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions that are in your Exhibit B. And that would conclude staff's comments.
Thank you. Any questions for staff?
A question.
Mr. Rowley.
Also, in the staff's, and I didn't see it in the recommendation, and I thought it was that it was to go merge back to 2.5 acre, and that if they came forward with their community water system, then they would be allowed the certificates. So my question is that if they choose to go the 2.5 acre, does that merge the lots underneath? Because that's also what we would require.
It merges the four lots into a single 2.5 acre parcel. What the applicant could do under the current zoning, which is residential suburban, the smallest parcel size in residential suburban is 1 acre.
Yeah.
And so with a community water system, they could come in then to divide into 2 1-acre parcels or 2 1.25-acre parcels.
Mm-hmm.
And potentially involve other surrounding parcels that are also within that residential suburban land use category.
Ms. Bianchi?
Would it be possible to approve this project with the condition that unless it has the community water system, it will not go forward? Or when they come in, excuse me, I said that backwards, if they would come in with the documentation that there is a community water system available, then the project would be approved, deemed approved?
I would defer that to County Council.
Jim Morton from County Council's office. I believe you could require that as a condition.
Otherwise, it wouldn't go forward.
Yeah. Well, it'd be a condition of any further development on the property. They either merge them together or they have a community system to serve it.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Does that mean if They have two of their neighbors want to join in to make it five in total. Could,
yeah.
That's what the condition explains.
Yeah, but they have to have the documentation for that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions, Mr. Patterson?
Yes, I'm curious to know logistically how that would work if you have five parcels that are undeveloped, or let's say six, and one would be the site for the well. But people are saying they would tie into that. Does that go on indefinitely? Because we can't expect, especially if they're under different ownership, for all of those parcels to be developed simultaneously. Would the condition be on all five that when they develop, they would tie into that particular system? Is that how that would work?
I believe the condition would be on the four parcels that are the subject of this application. And in order to have a community system, they would need to have five connected. And so they wouldn't be able to develop any of the four unless they could show they had a community system that was approved by the health department.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, also Lori Salo of Environmental Health is here to answer any specific questions you might have about how a community water system is formed and approved and that kind of information.
And does Ms. Salo would like to comment before any questions are asked, or she's just here to answer questions?
If you have questions, I'll answer
them. Sounds very good. Well, this is an appeal in front of us. The applicant is both the appellant and applicant. Is Mr. Stokes here and would like to comment on this item? No. And I don't have any requests from the public at large to speak.
Yeah, Mr. Sajjan, I had not heard from these people. And in reading staff's report, my recommendation was going to be one of two ways. One, Ms. Bianchi brought up, is that you condition these.
Mr. Ovid, let me.
Okay.
Officially close to the public at this time and bring it back to you since it's your district.
All right. One position was that because this is a conditional certificate of compliance that they would have to meet those conditions before anything would go further. And so that would be that you condition it two ways. Either they show justification of a community water system by the rules and regulations that we have, or that they merge into a 2.5-acre lot. The applicants aren't here to speak for themselves, and so the other thought was that basically I would almost continue this off calendar to allow them the opportunity to come up with this community water system and then continue the process.
Is that your motion, Mr. Ovid?
To move it off calendar?
I think I'm going to move it off calendar.
I'll second that.
And,
well,
you can't?
Can we do that?
Can we do that?
It's an appeal. You have to make some sort of decision on it. If you want to continue it to allow the applicant to come in and say something, you could do that. Otherwise, you'd make a decision and we'd record
it. That's the perplexity. So the issue then would be the motion is that in order for the applicant to receive the conditional certificates of compliance, that the conditions be, A, they merge 2.5-acre lot as the original condition was, or B, they show proof of establishment of a community water system per the county rules and regulations.
Second.
And that would be my motion.
And so that would be condition number two on page C-112, is that correct?
Yeah, I don't have the exact pages, but it sets up either or and then leaves it to their decision.
I'll second it.
So that amends condition two. Do we need to read something so that we have specific language? Thanks.
I thought the specific language that Supervisor Ovid read in the record is adequate.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay, with that, we have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
I'm sorry. Oh, Mrs. Bianchi seconded that?
Yes.
Yeah. Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. And at this time, Madam Clerk, do we bring our Kelmans?
I was wondering.
Well, Your next item on your agenda is closed session. I guess it's your decision how you want to handle that, because after that, it's the presentation and then lunch. So,
can I offer a suggestion?
Yes.
Since there's not a whole lot on the closed session issue, could we postpone that till after business today, because we have a whole bunch of things continued? That way we allow the one item that's there, and then we can get the cattleman and that done and go to continue the hanging of the cattleman.
Okay, but prior to accepting that, I have one request to speak on the closed session. Mr. Dugan?
Those two. I'm sorry, what are you doing?
This is a public hearing. Those who wish to speak on the closed session items.
Yeah, my name is Dave Dugan, Los Osos. Concerning Los Osos and a lawsuit, I guess you guys joined in, sent something to the bankruptcy court, and it in concerns to the financial problems of Los Osos and the bankruptcy. And I haven't had time to really look into what you guys want from this judge, but it came in by way of a filing, which Los Osos has got to answer. And it's got to... They got to spend money to get their lawyers to look at this. And every time that somebody brings someone something forward like this, it costs us more money. And right now, that's what we don't need. And this is the timeliness of this is just before the election. It just gives ammunition for some of the candidates to see the county has now filed against you guys, the ASD, and... Sure, I'm running for a seat in the CSD, but and maybe I could say the same thing that it would give me ammunition for electioneering. But you should understand that every time something like this comes up, we have to spend money. The district, the property owners are paying for this, and it just concerns me why you had to go this route now. Since the RCSD passed resolutions concerning finances and these other in these services already, which address these problems, I was one of the biggest people. I was one of the people that really speak up towards spending these reserves for these services, and I was very much against it. Very much went after Dan Blesky, the interim general manager, in the case of spending this money, telling him, if you don't know what the color of the money in these accounts are, then why are you spending this money? And we stopped that hemorrhaging before they were not solvent services anymore, but they are solvent services. And I think that if a new board is elected, that they'll address these problems as well. I don't think the county really needs to step in at this time to address these problems. The current CSD is addressing these problems, and I just think one more filing in the bankruptcy court is not helping whatsoever. In fact, I would respectfully ask you to withdraw your filing if you could, if it's possible, until at least after the election or at least after the first of the year, until we really have a clear view of what's going on in our these services that they provide. Right now, where the water services are adequate, fire department services are adequate, so... If I could maybe get an answer to a question, why this way and why now and what is your concerns, and maybe you should address that so I could, in my mind, understand why you would want to put this kind of pressure on the CSD. A lot of people think it's just the county trying to take over our services again and squeeze Los Osos out of its services, community services district. Personally, I don't think that's what you're going to do, but I have a lot of people that are addressing me for that, and if I'm on the board, I'll have to answer those questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dugan. And I don't know if we can answer enough of your questions. It's a closed session item, but thank you for sharing your concerns with us. Well, we do have the cattleman's hanging today, and would there be a spokesperson to address us, invite us to lunch?
Yeah, we've got a bunch of people standing outside out there, too. They're afraid to come in. Thank you.
Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Kevin Kester. I'm president of the San Luis Obispo County Cattlemen's Association, and it's a real pleasure to be able to speak today on something like this as opposed to coming in to the public hearings and always trying to do other things for property rights. And opportunities like this are a real pleasure, so good morning. The San Luis Obispo County Cattlemen's Association, as I think everyone knows, is honored Mr. Dwayne Baxley is the 2006 Cattleman of the Year. Dwayne was born and raised in Tulare, California, and while attending Tulare High School, Dwayne played on the football, basketball, and track teams, and he also found many hours to spend working on the family dairy farm and attending livestock sales with his father. Being involved in 4-H and FFA, as well as spending time with his dad at the local sales yard, Dwayne found his true love in the livestock business. This led him to Cal Poly here in San Luis. While attending Cal Poly, Dwayne helped pay for his college education by buying and selling cattle, thus leading him to the Templeton livestock market, where in 1970 he bought into the business he so loved and became a part owner in it. Dwayne also served in the Coast Guard and graduated from Cal Poly in 1965 with a degree in animal science. As a partner in the Templeton livestock market, Dwayne brought many new innovative ideas into the livestock marketing business, along with his partners Dick Nock and Richard Stober, and later with Jan Davis and the late Gary Davis. Dwayne's ownership of the TLM lasted over 35 years until he stepped aside and sold the business to his son, Randy, and Chad Davis and Mike Massey. Dwayne became one of the world's top auctioneers, competing in numerous world champion auctioneer contests and finishing reserve champion for the Western region in 1985. In his career as an auctioneer, Dwayne has sold several million head of cattle, which has generated well over $1 billion worth of sales. Dwayne has run cattle throughout the Tri-Counties area here and maintained an outstanding mother cow herd. Young people have always had a soft spot in Dwayne's heart. Thus, Dwayne has served for over 40 years, donated his time and support to the California Mid-State Fair Junior Livestock Auction, not to mention all the other charitable auctions that Dwayne has supported. Being an accomplished horseman, Dwayne has won many equestrian events, including roping, rein cow horse events, and team pinning. In fact, Dwayne is a past three-year world champion team pinner. Dwayne has two sons, Randy and Randy's wife, Beth, Clay and Clay's wife, Kaylee, and about 10 grandchildren. The family runs cattle throughout the Tri-Counties area. Dwayne has been an active member of the San Luis Obispo County Cattlemen's Association, as well as our state and national cattlemen's associations, as well as being a member of the Farm Bureau and the Ranchero Visitadores. By the above-mentioned accomplishments and involvement in the cattle industry, trying to keep up with the numerous changes in the industry and the needs to in the community, it is easy to see why Dwayne Baxley has been chosen by his peers for the 2006 Cattleman of the Year. Congratulations to Dwayne and for all his many years of service to the industry.
Would you bring Dwayne forward, and maybe he would like to address us as well?
Yes.
Thank you, Kevin. Ladies and gentlemen of the board, it's my honor to be here today. I really appreciate the privilege to come down here. I do want to thank the board. I really thank the San Luis Obispo County Cattlemen's Association for this honor. It's good to see a lot of my peers here today, a lot of my good friends. Like I said before, it really humbles me to be able to join the ranks of those who received this honor in the past years, a lot of whom have been my mentors over the years. So that makes the honor that much greater. That's about all I can really say.
Well, thank you and congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dwayne. And I would like to make sure everybody knows they're invited to lunch at Madonna Inn, as well as staff. So hope to see you there.
Thank you. We'll see you there soon. Any comments?
I wanted to bring up one thing, and I don't know if I'm stepping on your shoes, but your able assistant actually put the program together we've been trying to do for a number of years. And if
about the
you go plants. Down the hall and you start to go out the door, you'll now see the Cattleman of the Year display, and the Cattleman Women of the Year display will be at the end of this hallway down here instead of in the halls or the dark basement of the building. So she was, Vicky did an excellent job in getting that moved over. So it's now displayed where a vast number of us will get to see that.
In other words, it's right next to the cafeteria.
Yeah.
And yeah, and my personal thanks to Ms. Jensen, who is a member of the Cattle Women's, for her hard work to make this placement of the plaques available today, just before today. And congratulations again, and we'll join you for a quick lunch at Madonna Inn. And we'll return at 2 p.m. to continue our meeting.
Who's driving?
Afternoon session for October 17th meeting. At this time, Madam Clerk, would you please introduce item C2?
Item C2 is a hearing to consider the annual update of the North Coast Circulation Study and a resolution implementing the continuation of the existing road improvement fees for the North Coast area and a portion of the North Coast planning areas. And this item is being recommended to be continued to October 24th, and I don't see any staff here.
Okay. Would...
Would we like to move the recommendation?
Right.
Recommendation continued?
Yes.
Second.
We have a motion by Ms. Bianchi, seconded by Supervisor Lentol. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Next item, please.
Next item is item C3. This is a hearing to consider the annual update of the Los Osos Circulation Study and resolution implementing modified road improvement fees for the Los Osos area. This item is also being recommended to be continued to October 24th, 2006, and again, staff is not here.
Is this a gravity feed?
Ms. Bianchi?
Do you want to continue it?
Yes.
Do you want to make a motion?
I shouldn't cut my time quite so close. I'm trying to figure out what people have passed out.
I was just going to ask you if this is
okay. While you're taking your time, does anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Everybody is for a different item. Ms. Bianchi, your motion?
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Moved by Ms. Bianchi, seconded by Supervisor Lentol. By Supervisor Ovid. Seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Any objections? Ayes have it. Next item, please.
Next item is item C4. This is a hearing to consider the appeal by Bill Freeman of the Planning Commission's decision on June 22, 2006 to deny a conditional use permit that would waive land use ordinance standards that prohibit an outdoor used car lot within a central business district. The proposed project is within the commercial retail land use category and is located at 1921 and 1941. How do you say that?
Cienega.
Thank you. It's one of those ones that just stick. In the Central Business District of the community of Oceano in the 4th District, this item was continued from August 8, 2006. Recommendations for approval of the appeal.
Okay, with that, be.
Thank you, Chairman and members of the board. Martha Nieder, County Planning. At your August 8th meeting, your board took tentative action to approve the project with revisions so that the outdoor used car lot is compatible with the commercial retail land use category and the surrounding residential uses. If the clerk will bring up the presentation. Staff provided the applicant with a detailed list of project components that are necessary to revise the project so that it's consistent with the board's tentative action. And here's a revised site plan showing some of those changes. There's a couple of things that need to be worked out, and I'll discuss those, and they follow with the conditions of approval that are recommended in your board packet. The first is that the site plan shows some customer parking that blocks in display vehicle parking down in this corner. That area needs to be revised so that display vehicles could be moved without having customers move their cars. Also, this area in back, which on the grading plan is shown to be storage, is conditioned to be revised to show that this area is improved with landscaping and paving materials consistent with the rest of the site. Storage is not an allowable outdoor storage is not an allowable use in the commercial retail land use category. The applicant has stated that this area, they're not going to use it for storage. It's really a retention area to accommodate drainage off of the alley. If this area is to be used as a retention basin, then it would need to not be fenced and be landscaped according to how retention basins throughout the county are required to be landscaped and treated. A couple other things is that we haven't received the information from Caltrans yet related to drainage and site access. Therefore, the project has been conditioned to meet all applicable requirements of Public Works and Caltrans prior to construction permit application submittal. The plan also shows a couple of light standards along this property line. Right now, there's a question of whether they exceed the height of the tallest structure on the site, so we need verification that they match the height of the tallest structure. Also, the lights need to be shielded so that there isn't light spread onto neighboring properties. Currently, the information that we have shows that light spread would go about 60 feet onto neighboring properties. A critical point of the compatibility is the landscaping. And here's the preliminary landscaping plan, and the project is conditioned to have all of these, the proposed landscaping implemented. Here's the proposed color board. The sign simulates a Highway 1 identification sign, which is prohibited by the land use ordinance. So the project's been conditioned to submit a revised sign plan that shows a sign copy that doesn't simulate a traffic sign and that the colors are more compatible with what's proposed for the building here. So they're a little more consistent. Also, this red color here is what's proposed for the wood fence. This is a pretty bright red, so the project is again conditioned so that this color is revised to be more consistent with what's proposed for the building, so a more brown colored finish. The tentative motion on August 8th also included a 5-year stipulation, which I did not include with the conditions of approval in your staff report package, so I've handed out a proposed new condition 13 in the memo, and it's also up here on your screen, which requires a review after 5 years for compatibility with the neighborhood. That concludes my presentation. Staff recommends approval of the project based on the findings in Exhibit A and the conditions in Exhibit B.
Thank you. A question from me for clarification purposes, that if this applicant had come in front of us from early on with a canopy included, he would not have needed our approval, would have been approved on a staff level. Because the specific plan would have allowed the use as an indoor use rather than outdoor use.
Correct. An indoor use is allowable. Correct.
I'll say a little more later. Mr. Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Nieder, a question regarding condition 13 that you just spoke to. It leaves the requirement of noticing the county for review after 5 years to the applicant. Is that typically the way it's done? What happens if the applicant doesn't come in for that review? Is there a way to trigger it so the county brings it up, or how's
yeah.
it done?
We will track it through our tracking system. This kind of does a double check where it really puts the onus on the applicant, but we will know when that 5 years is up and if they've failed to come in for the review.
But he has to come for license renewal every year, right?
Excuse me?
License renewal to operate?
I'm not sure the requirements for that.
Business license. And
oh, yearly, correct.
Yes, so this can be tracked with the business license every year.
Thank you.
Any other questions for staff? Seeing none, go to the appellant who happened to be the applicant. If you come forward, please, and give us your name for the record, and we're going to give you 10 minutes. And we'll give you 5 minutes at later for rebuttal if there are any, if there's a need to.
Okay, thank you. My name's Don Peterman from Pass Robles. I think I got it right this time. I'm happy to say that...
I want to bring the mic a little bit closer.
I'm sorry, is that better?
Yeah, I can hear you better that way.
I'm happy to say that it looks like we've been able to come out with a workable program, thanks to all your help and staff's latest help and recommendations. We... From the time that we submitted all the information to the staff and got their recommendations back, we're really against a time crunch to come in here today. We've just handed Mrs. Nieder quite a packet showing most of the items that she has discussed with you have already been taken care of. You each have a packet there. For instance, if you look at that, you've got a revised plan for the sign that obviously makes it not...
You notice that Cienega is misspelled on that sign.
You're certainly right, it is. I hadn't noticed that, but yes, ma'am.
But it's not part of the condition that you
write
it, spell it correctly.
I promise we'll get it correct. On this sheet also reflects the new sign color, or excuse me, fencing color that the county had asked for, and a new color palette. We've got the structural changes made to the building that they've asked for. The lighting revision, we've also given that to her, and it does not reflect onto neighbors' properties. We did have to move the lighting slightly, as the county requested. All that's been complied with. The only thing I guess I object to what Ms. Nieder said is regarding the storage item. If you can pull it up on the overhead screen, that back area that was marked as storage, we didn't, as laymen, we didn't realize what that meant with the county. And in speaking with Mr. Stevens, he said as long as we took the word storage out of there and there was no access back to that so that we couldn't drive cars back to there, that we did not have to pave that or landscape that. That was per Chuck Stevenson. So that has already been corrected as far as the engineer is concerned. And while Ms. Nieder is right, we have not given the county anything from Caltrans. It is in the works. It takes Caltrans a little bit longer than the time that we had allotted. Obviously, nothing can go through without that permit anyway. And in general, they have said what we want to do is fine. They've made some small corrections for drainage basins and things like that that we need to get to the county. We just got that information back from them yesterday. It's a little too short to get it to the county, but... Other than that, I agree. I think that we have a workable plan, and we hope for your continued support on this.
Thank you. Please.
Bill Freeman, the applicant. Something I wanted to mention is Peter Hendricks from Caltrans has been probably the most cooperative person I've ever worked with in a government agency. He has actually compiled a list, and it's in that package, of a few of the things that he would like us to change. He wants us to put the retention basin in the front planter, so some of these plants in the front will be removed. The palm tree, he doesn't want shallow or deep-rooted plants up there. And so we have the landscaper, the engineer, and Caltrans all working as a unit to get a complete package to you. So that's. I just want you to understand we are... And Caltrans told me it usually takes 60 to 90 days to complete this action. They've gotten this far in 30 days, and they have been really, really aggressive in getting this. We do have to do, according to the package, a chemical analysis of the soil or of the runoff to make sure it's not pollutant, and that's being handled by the engineer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't have any requests to speak from the public at large. Does anyone would like to comment on this item in front of us? If not, would you like to have any closing remarks, or seems like you are in cooperation with the staff?
No, sir, unless I'm misunderstanding, I think we're in agreement.
Okay. If we have any questions from my colleagues, we'll call you back. Otherwise, thank you. Mr. Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Nieder, We were just told of some recommendations from Caltrans regarding the landscaping in the front and moving the retention basin up there. And I know one of the concerns when this issue was first raised at the board was the visual impact of a car lot from, you know, the street, and that the county had some specific landscaping criteria that would help mitigate the visual impact. Is the recommendation from Caltrans going to impact how the county has conditioned the site for landscaping? How do you all work together to meet the needs of both agencies?
The proposed landscaping plan will need to meet both requirements. So if Caltrans' requirement is to get rid of the palm trees, that wouldn't be a problem for planning. They could be replaced with other types of landscaping that's acceptable, or the palm trees really aren't a screening vegetation, so that probably wouldn't affect the plan much at all.
But I guess my point is that you do work together to try to
correct.
Meet. Okay.
Right.
Thank you. Mr. Ovid.
If there's no other comments, I would...
Yeah, I would like to make a comment, and I'll come to you for a motion. Okay. I'll appreciate that. Right after we approved this, it was thrown out of proportion. I want to make some comments to clear the air, if nothing else, because I work very hard on the specific plan. And during when we were redistricting our districts, I gave up two areas in St. Louis to keep Oceano within my territory, speaking of Country Club and Rolling Hills in St. Louis. The reason I do that, because I care for the community a lot. And this is in front of us for a waiver. Within the specific plan, a car dealership can go in with the exception that it requires a canopy. So we're not allowing a business to go in that was absolutely no-no under specific plan. And specific plans are similar to general plans. And it's very lawful that an applicant can come in front of us to ask for an authorization for a process. And that's the legal avenue to do that. And to say that this is anti the community's desire, it is not so, unless you have never been involved with the community. Because this has gone in front of the advisory council. Advisory council are the same people who attended the specific plan, came to all the meetings, spoke their mind, and agreed on the specific plan. And those who attend the advisory councils are the same people who come and attended the specific plan process. And this was unanimously supported by advisory council. And allow me to also say that there are members on the advisory council who are elected officials of that same community. So this is not an anti-desires of the community. The community is very lucky to have two downtowns. We have Pier Avenue that attracts visitor serving activities, and we have Cienega or Highway 1 that attracts businesses that benefits the locals as far as car dealership, some of the their community offices, stores of any kind, and does this complement the neighborhood? You better believe it, because right across the street you have another car dealership. How dare we say, well, it's good if you're on the other side of the street, but you're not good if you're on this side of the street. So I didn't take those comments, as you recognize, all that easy, because we put our heart into to make Oceano what the community wanted to it become. So again, let me remind everyone that this is not something against a specific plan. The only thing we're waiving here, allowing the business not to have a canopy, and because of that, we're limiting their operation for 5 years only. And I wouldn't spend the money for a canopy 5 years down the road. I'm going to be told that I'm no longer desired to be in that corner. And looking at the plans as what we see in front of us, compared to what there is today, yes, what there is today is an eyesore, and what we see happening, I wish Chuck was here, Stevenson. He commented that this was going to make the place look good. With that, Supervisor Ovid.
Oh, okay. I was just going to adopt a resolution to approve the appeal and reverse Planning Commission decision. Based on the findings in Exhibit A and conditions listed in Exhibit B, including Condition 13, which was added.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Ovid, seconded by Supervisor Lenthal. The roll call, please.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Ms. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. Thank you. With that, we'll move to Item C5, please.
You can stick around for the rest of the day. You guys have been here all day.
Item C5 is a hearing to consider a number of appeals. Do you want me to read them all, or you just want to go one by one on them?
Mr. Hogg, what's your preference?
Why doesn't... Pardon.
I recommend she read the preamble, and then we'll have Mr. Waller identify each individual request. And forgive me, Vicki, but these are Ag Preserve requests, not appeals.
Did I say appeals?
You did.
Oh, well, I bet.
I'm sorry.
Okay, then we'll just follow that order. And should we take action on each item separately?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, we'll move forward.
Okay, this is item C5. This is a hearing to consider four proposals to establish or alter boundaries of agricultural preserves. C5A is Robert and Paula Campbell Taylor, a request to alter and expand the boundaries of an adjacent agricultural preserve to include this site and enable the landowner to enter into a land conservation contract. And project is located at 6990 Australia Road, east of the community of San Miguel in the 1st District. Item B is Michael Wilson, a request to establish an agricultural preserve to enable the applicant to enter into a land conservation contract. And project is located at 445 Indian Creek Road, approximately 9 miles east of the community of Creston in the 5th District. Item C is Tri-Am Rental Group, a request to alter and expand the boundaries of an agricultural preserve to add 30 acres of land and reduce the minimum parcel size requirement. And site is located east of Santa Maria in the 4th District. And the last one, which was added to your agenda this morning, which was inadvertently left off, is item D. This is Donald and Barbara Hoffer to alter the boundaries of an agricultural preserve and contract by adding approximately 30 acres. And the project is located at 1535 Kyler Canyon Road, approximately 3/4 mile southeast of Paso Robles in the 1st District.
Thank you, Vicki. Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. As your board knows, we bring the year's worth of Ag Preserve requests to your board, usually in two components toward the end of the year, so that we can give prospective participants in the program maximum opportunity to apply and then get through the process by the end of the calendar year so that they can have the property tax reductions of the program take effect at the beginning of the next fiscal year, the next tax year. You have four proposals before you today. They've all been noticed for public hearing. They do require separate hearings and actions. Unfortunately, we can't batch them. These four requests will result in a total of 301 acres being added to the program, and there's currently over 825,000 acres of land under contract in the county. It is the county's premier program for agricultural land protection. Mr. Waller will be giving the reports on each one of these, and the recommendations are for approval. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Waller.
The first item is a request by Robert.
Mr. Waller, can you check your microphone?
Is your mic on?
I'm sorry.
See if the green light underneath is on.
There you go.
Okay. How's that? Better?
Yeah.
Very good. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Terry Waller, planning staff. The first item today, I'm sorry, Warren, did you want me to read all these entirety?
Just do them by title and summary.
Originally, I was going to have you read them all to save Vicki's voice, but she went ahead and did it anyway, so you can just...
You don't want me to reread them?
Why don't you just introduce us?
No. I'll just identify
summary.
Which one we're
just
on.
Just the bare bones.
Very good. This is a county file number AGP 2005-0022. It's a request by Robert and Paula Campbell Taylor. Their request is to alter and expand the boundaries of an adjacent agricultural preserve to include this site and enable them to enter into a land conservation contract. This property is cultivated with 12 acres of irrigated vineyard and also has 69 acres of grazing land. The predominant soil type is Class 4. The property qualifies for an agricultural preserve by being added to an adjoining agricultural preserve, which is located just to the southeast, as you can see on your exhibit. And this qualifies as an individual property with mixed irrigated vineyard and rangeland on soils described in the Resource Conservation Soil Survey as moderately suited as rangeland. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval with a minimum parcel size of 160 acres and an initial term of 20 years. be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Does anyone from the public wish to comment on this item? Seeing none, Supervisor Ovid.
Move for the staff's recommendation on...
Moved by Supervisor Ovid, seconded by Supervisor Bianchi. The roll call, please.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Linthon?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. Item B, please.
The next item is county file number AGP 2005-00025, which is a request by Michael Wilson to establish a new agricultural preserve to enable the applicant to enter into a land conservation contract. This project consists of 160 acres. The property is used as rangeland with approximately 35 head of cattle being grazed on the property at this time. The predominant soil types are Class 4 and Class 6. The property qualifies for the program with over 100 acres of land described in the Resource Conservation Soils Survey as moderately to well-suited as rangeland. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval with a minimum parcel size of 320 acres and an initial term of 20 years.
Thank you. Anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, Supervisor Ovid.
This is in District 5, Mr. Sanchez.
You changed it around.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, B is now D.
Okay. My fault. Okay. I have too many pilots here. My apologies. Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Move approval of staff recommendation.
Moved by Supervisor Patterson, seconded by Supervisor Bianchi. Roll call, please.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Linthon?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. Next item, whatever number that might be.
The next item is county file number A010011A, and it's a request by Tri-M Rental Group to alter and expand the boundaries of an agricultural preserve to add 30 acres of land and also to reduce the minimum parcel size requirement. The property is located at the southerly end of Rancho El Sway at the confluence of the Cuyama River and Santa Maria River. Actually, a portion of the property is in the Santa Maria River, and this is east of Santa Maria. This one's a little bit unusual in that it has quite a long history to it. It was initially processed by my predecessor, Frank Heinzen, and it was delayed in the course of finaling the lot line adjustment. There was some additional land that needed to be merged into the parcels when they did the legal parcel research for that. And so the areas in the exhibit down to the south, a little kind of triangular pieces that are identified as land from lot merger to be added, will be added to each of these two parcels. There's also a reduction in minimum parcel size for parcel one based on irrigated row crop of 52 acres, which allows the minimum parcel size to be reduced to 160 acres. And so we actually, a little bit unusual, we have a two different minimum parcel sizes here today, 320 acres for the grazing land on the parcel two to the west, and a 160-acre minimum parcel size for the property, parcel one, to the east on your exhibit. The recommended term, I should say Agricultural Preserve Review Committee, as well as the Planning Commission, recommend approval to your board with a minimum parcel size, as I stated earlier, and the remaining term of the existing contract to be the effective term on the additional property being added.
Thank you. Does anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, bring it back to the board for...
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Bianchi, seconded by Supervisor Linthon. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Linthon?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
And the last item today is county file number AGP 2005-00021, which is a request by Donald and Barbara Hoffer to alter the boundaries of an agricultural preserve by adding approximately 30 acres. The applicant is requesting that this 30-acre property be added to their existing agricultural preserve. The property to be added is cultivated with 11 acres of irrigated vineyard, and the majority of the rest of it is in dense oak woodland. The predominant soil types are Class 2 and Class 4, and this property qualifies for the program as an addition to an existing agricultural preserve and land conservation contract. According to the following provision in the rules of procedure, a property owner under contract who acquires adjacent parcels of any size may add this land by amendment of the existing agricultural preserve and contract. The contract amendment is to recognize the remaining term of the original contract, but in no event less than 10 years. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval to your board with a minimum parcel size of 40 acres and a minimum term equal to the remaining term of the existing contract, which is actually rolling over at 10 years.
Thank you. Any comments from the public? Seeing none, Supervisor Ovid.
Move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Ovid, seconded by Supervisor Bianchi. Roll call, please.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shahjian?
Aye. At this time, we'll move to closed session. How much time, Mr. Linthal? 20 minutes, and to the public's information, we'll be meeting as both the Board of Supervisors and IHSS Public Authority. Okay, we shall return.
See you later.
Okay. Thank you. We're back in session. Mr. Linholm, would you please report from closed session?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The board met in closed session just now on some of the items which were listed on the agenda. The meeting took less than 20 minutes. The board took no final action on any particular item. It means no public report is required, and that's today's public report. Thank you.
With that, this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you for making us on time, Mr. Linholm.
Oh, my God, too funny.
You get a special note of that in the clerk's log.
I am. Under 20.
You going to do anything about her?
I already talked to Quasha.
What?